I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
One more dive into the Disney afternoon.
Yeah.
This is our third dive in, and this is, I guess one could consider this, one of the lesser known Disney afternoon shows.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, that this is one that sort of missed us when it first came on. We kind of knew it existed, but we were never, like, super into it. So today we get to do a deep dive into it. Mostly because it's a request.
Yes, it was a special request of our special guest.
And you know, I gotta say something about that though. There is one non-Disney, well, yet, property that we talk a lot about on this show, don't we?
Yeah,
there's a weird little show called Mighty Magiswords you may have heard us talk about in, like, every single episode we've ever recorded.
Pretty much, yeah.
And there's a reason for that, so would our mystery guest enter and sign in, please?
Oh, hello. I'm here now. I'm Kyle Carosa, and I created the show Mighty Magiswords on Cartoon Network. I like how you said yet as if, like, you know, the prospect of Disney buying Warner Brothers is absolutely terrifying, because that would take us past Monopoly directly to Chutes and Ladders.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure that's where we are eventually heading, but we have already decided that eventually Disney will own everything, and so our show will be all-encompassing for all media in the universe.
You know how in Demolition Man how all restaurants became Taco Bell? All media will become Disney.
Yep.
Well, I could use the three shells around now while we're on quarantine.
Oh, so we are talking about the Schnookums and Meat funny cartoon show.
Yes.
As we talked about before we recorded, a spinoff of a spinoff.
Because sort of.
This started off as a segment on the Saturday morning cartoon show Marsupilami, which in turn was spun off from the show Raw Tunage,
as well as the Belgian comic book Marsupilami, itself a spinoff of Spiro e Fantasio.
Yeah, and of course Raw Tunage also gave us Bonkers, so that's also a spinoff. We'll get to that eventually. We will eventually.
I could get into some Bonkers minutia right now, because that was, you know, Bonkers the series was planned first, but this was like a way, like the Bonkers shorts were put into Raw Tunage to start giving some, like, early context to Bonkers being a cartoon star. But that is a conversation for another time.
Well, we'll bring you back. Hopefully, we can bring you back for the Bonkers episode. We will eventually get through every single show that's ever been on the Disney afternoon. And on that, Schnookums and Meat, along with Aladdin the series, are the only two Disney afternoon shows not on Disney Plus. That needs to change, Disney. You need to add these two shows. Make it the all-encompassing Disney afternoonage.
Andre the Black Nerd has been tweeting since Disney Plus started about the things that are missing off of Disney Plus and stuff, and has mentioned some very interesting cartoons and everything. So yeah, we're not the only ones that have noticed.
Gummy Bears on Disney Plus?
Yeah. Huh. Gummy Bears, DuckTales, Darkwing Duck, Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, Goof Troop, Quack Pack, Gargoyles, yeah. Obviously, Bonkers. It's just those are the only two that are not on there. Well, oh yeah, even the Mighty Ducks cartoon's on there. Yeah, well, that's gonna be a weird one, because we gotta get to the movies before we can get to that one, even though it has nothing to do with the movies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in addition, Disney currently owns three shows by Schnookums and Meat creator Bill Kopp, and doesn't have any of them up on Disney Plus.
Yeah, we can talk about those in a bit. Eat the Cat being one of them.
Yeah, and the other being Mad Jack the Pirate.
Yep. So since you are our guest and you are the expert on this, why don't you give us an introduction of what the Snookums and Meat Funny Cartoon Show is.
We just mentioned Eek the Cat. Bill Kopp is the co-creator and voice of Eek the Cat, and Disney had been courting him to make a show for them. They specifically wanted a cat and dog show. In addition, Disney had in their stable all of a sudden, as a result of all the drama that went backstage on the Ren and Stimpy show, a bunch of the former Spumco cartoonists. And so they kind of combined Bill's writing with the artwork of these cartoonists, and you got the Snookums and Meat Funny Cartoon Show.
Yeah, this is definitely has a lot of style of the Ren and Stimpy show, not just the art style, but some of the timing style. I remember back in the day, this and Two Stupid Dogs were considered the Ren and Stimpy ripoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least in the case of this show, there were a lot of the same people involved. Even the show's creative director, Jeff DeGrandis, had worked on the Ren and Stimpy show. Mm-hmm. So when you have the same people involved, it's going to resemble it.
Yeah, definitely, there's a lot of, I would say there's a lot of, it's very similar to Tom and Jerry in the way they abuse each other.
Right, and, you know, that may have something to do with, I mean, that may have had something to do with the reason they hired Bill Kopp to direct some of those direct-to-video Tom and Jerry movies later. Mm.
When I was watching this, at least the Snookums and Meat segments, I thought that some of that was, like, directly almost shot for shot out of some Tom and Jerry kind of shenanigans. It felt very much like that. And I loved that. I liked that about it. It's not a slight against it at all.
Yeah, I feel like the Snookums and Meat shorts are kind of like that direct middle place between Tom and Jerry and Spy vs. Spy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a similar Spy vs. Spy kind of thing to it. Really, you know, you can really tell the animation style is very, you know, Ren and Stimpy kind of influenced, you know, that same kind of style. And honestly, when we first kind of were talking to you about coming on the show, and you were like, Snookums and Meat, and I will say I originally was like, was that a Disney thing? Because I swore that was a Nicktoon, because it really nope. does feel like the Nicktoons from that same time.
Yeah, with the popularity of Ren and Stimpy, a lot of the studios were trying to we want some of that themselves, and that's kind of what we got with Snookums and Meat.
Yeah,
because this is definitely more edgy than the average Disney cartoon.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of weird what we were considering edgy, because that was what I heard about the show too. You know, like what I knew about the show was it was like. When I read up on it before actually watching any of it, it was like, you know, oh, this is the edgy Disney. This was Disney trying to be edgy, like Nicktoons. And I was like, but is anything in Snookums and Meat really that edgy? Because a lot of it was stuff they did in Tex Avery shorts or, some of the old Tom and Jerry stuff or something.
That wasn't what Disney did. You know, Disney was wholesome entertainment. This is never that violent.
You know, well, it's yeah. You know, it's worth mentioning that, you know, that's just kind of like the flavor that Bill likes to do. Like, you know, edgy for a kid's show, but he still doesn't like to go much farther than the old shorts unless he's specifically asked to. Like, Bill's previous work for Disney was the Roger Rabbit shorts. Mm-hmm. Like, he had been on the writing staff of those, and, you know, that's probably one of the big reasons why they called him on for this, because they wanted him to do stuff that's, you know, along those lines.
Yeah, I can see that.
I could see, now you say Roger Rabbit, I can definitely see there's a lot of similarities there, too. And Roger Rabbit was, again, just inspired by the old Tex Avery shorts. Especially with the exaggerated expression, like, ah! You know?
Yeah. So, let's, is that kind of the background are we done with?
Yeah, I guess so. We can go, at this point, we usually go into our voice cast. And that is usually half the episode is us talking about these voice actors.
Oh, I see.
We love to geek out on voice actors.
Yeah, people want to know, why are your show 3 hours long? Yeah, half of that is just talking, just sucking up to these voice actors.
Yeah, and the other part is me talking about my absolute love of Clark Gregg. Which has become a major theme recently for some reason.
I see.
Really? The major theme of the show is Kiki's crushes.
Yeah, and I've had a crush on a voice actor or two in my life. I'm not going to... Anyway...
Speaking of,
none of them are on this list. Yay!
I'm surprised because the first one I want to talk about is Jason Marsden at Schnookums.
Yeah, yeah. Who was roughly 18 when he was recording this show.
So,
oh, wow.
Other Disney fans might know him as the voice of Max in a Goofy movie.
And we'll get there. We will get there.
And the best friend on like 10 sitcoms.
I was going to set step by step since we're talking Disney.
Yeah.
As well as Boy Meets World.
Yeah, I actually
that was
think...
Strong. That was Ryder Strong.
No, he was Eric's friend for a while.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, yeah, during the college years.
No, before then, it was like season four, gonna say?
Ah.
He was also, we've mentioned him before, because he was also one of the numerous voices of Kevin on Adventures with Gummy Bears.
So yeah,
he was one of the later Kevins, but yes.
It was like him, Faustino, and MC Bat Commander, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we didn't know the MC Bat Commander thing until after we recorded that episode.
Yeah.
Right.
But the coolest thing I am going to say, this is my one little moment of geek out. basically, his first role, Jason Marsden's first role, was in a movie called Robot Jocks that nobody remembers except me, because it was a Charles Band movie, and it has a bit part played by Jeffrey Combs. So it came across when I was going through the entire Jeffrey Combs back catalog.
I'm trying to remember where I saw that movie mentioned recently. Might have been something Movie Bob was doing.
Yeah, maybe. It's not quite to like, you know, MST3K kind of levels of infamy, but it is one of those that if you are a real connoisseur of strange... sometimes not so great B-movies. it is one that kind of a lot of us geek on, and me specifically. So that was fun when I was looking up his background. But as far as Schnookums, though, I really thought that this was, for about 2 seconds, I thought that was Rob Paulsen.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely has a Rob Paulsen-y voice.
Yeah, it sounds like him trying to be Paulsen.
Paulsen could do.
Yeah. Especially with that sort of New York-y accent that kind of gave Schnookums.
Yeah.
I really love the voice.
Yeah, I really love Schnookums' voice.
Yeah.
And considering that the other two Animaniacs are on this show, you would think, right? And we'll get there. Is that all we can say about Jason Marsden for right now?
I mean, that's fine. Yep.
Yeah. Moving on to meet the legend, Frank Welker.
Frank Welker.
Kind of amazing to think about the age difference between the two stars of this show.
Yeah, that's several generation gap right there.
You know, and playing a cat and dog of roughly the same age.
Yeah. And it's like, if we need to tell you about Frank Welker... He's been in everything. We've talked about him enough. Pretty much almost every other episode, we're talking about a Frank Welker role in this movie.
Yeah, pretty much every animation episode we've gone through, I think, has had Frank Welker somewhere in there.
Do you hear an animal? That's Frank Welker.
Yeah, you think it's a dog barking down the street, but really, Frank Welker just drove through your neighborhood.
Yep, and as far as main characters, he only plays the one in Meat, which is rare.
Yeah, usually when we talk about him, he plays like four different characters in whatever we're talking about.
Yeah. We get Frank Welker talking to Frank Welker about things.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, even if you watch, he, you know, he's not in either of the other two segments. He's only in the Schnookums and Meat segments, and he doesn't often play a lot of side characters in those. Just, you know, he's usually just Meat and maybe one
maybe
or
an
two
announcer,
other.
Yeah, because in one of the cartoons where you saw, he does play a TV announcer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, yeah, I mean, Meat is the character of Meat. It's definitely, I can definitely see the Ren and Stimpy comparisons with Meat kind of being the not-as-smart one compared to Schnookums being the smart aleck.
So yeah, they've reversed the Ren and Stimpy dynamic in the fact that in this one, the dog is kind of the slower-witted one in some respects.
Frank, is that you?
My dog did not like me calling a dog slow-witted. I apologize.
Your dog has opinions.
Yeah, either that or, like you said, Frank Welker just drove by. I don't know what's going on out there. So, all right, who else we got?
We've got the other two main characters in the Schnookums and Meat short, Tress McNeil as wife and Steen McCall as husband. Or the humans, or the folks, or her, depending on which version of... The people, yeah. They're called different names in these cartoons, but they're the humans that own Schnookums and Meat. You don't see their faces, and they're not in the episodes very long. Again, Tress McNeil, another Animaniacs actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in addition, this is the only segment where Schnookums and Meat is the only segment where she plays a character, and she isn't in the other two.
Yeah, and we talked about Tress McNeil before. We talked about her in, I want to say the Gummy Bears episode. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's definitely a legend in voice acting. She's, again, if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, she likely was the female voice in whatever cartoon you were watching.
Yeah, if it wasn't June Foray, it was her.
And not unlike Frank, she was fairly ubiquitous at this time. She was, like, on every show.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to Gray starting yet. We'll get to Gray Griffin stuff later.
Right.
Hi, Gray. I know you're not listening.
Yeah. You could say that that Gray and Bowser are the Frank and Tress of their time, of this time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they are definitely stepping into those shoes, I think. They are everywhere.
To kind of pause the discussion, yesterday the trailer for the new Looney Tunes show came out, and yeah. Eric Bowser's all over that thing.
Yeah, he's almost every character, and I've seen like 40 minutes worth of this. He plays the lion's share of the characters. Bob Bergen and Billy West are kind of still in their seemingly permanent positions as Porky Pig and Elmer Fudd. And I'm trying to remember who was playing Yosemite Sam in that trailer. It might have been Freddie Tatasciore.
Yeah,
Are you familiar with the Looney Tunes app game?
No.
It's called, what is it called? It just says Looney Tunes when I click on it, and I've clicked on it. World of Mayhem.
Oh, okay.
And Bowser is so everybody but Porky in that he even plays Granny.
We have talked about the wonderful documentary I Know That Voice before on the show, but if you watch that, there is a great segment where the current voice of Porky Pig breaks down exactly how the stutter works with Porky Pig. He breaks it down beat by beat, and then he speeds it up into the normal Porky voice, and then he ends with, "And I am currently the only person in the world that can do that, and that's why I have a job."
Right.
Not even Mel Blanc could do that. Mel Blanc had to get his voice sped up for Porky.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Daffy.
And Daffy.
If you haven't, there have been a number of shows, one of which being, you know, Rob Paulsen's Talking Tunes, where Bob Bergen talks about basically, like, sneakily crashing a Mel Blanc recording session when he was a kid.
Oh, that has to be the greatest memory in the world. Oh, that's, I feel about, Frank Welker in a similar way I do Mel Blanc. Like, I never got to meet Mel Blanc because he was kind of gone before my time, really. But I have a constant prayer of, like, please let me be able to meet Frank Welker at least once before I die. Like, please, universe, give me that one thing. Because he has been such a massive part of my life and my, you know, shaping my childhood that I'm like, I just once want to look that man in the eye and be like, thank you for existing.
I kind of had a similar experience when I saw Rob Paulsen do Animaniacs Live a few years ago. Like, I got to meet Rob Paulsen and just pretty much tell him thank you for everything. And it's to see one of your childhood favorites in front of you and to tell them, even I think for the actors, you know, I know for a lot of actors, you know, these shows are just a job, but for a kid growing up, you know, you're their hero, and for them to, you know, to meet them and just tell them, you know, thank you for shaping my childhood, I am who I am because of you.
Well, I mean, Rob in particular is like very, very aware of that and really, really appreciates it. Meeting them's one thing. Then be in the position to tell them what to do.
Yeah, because Rob did a few voices for Magiswords.
Yeah, he did it when. Here's the thing. It seemed like he was when we were first recording the Professor Cyrus segments for the Adventure Academy shorts before Professor Cyrus showed up in the show proper. Rob was having a little trouble with kind of like some gravel in his voice. It was like, you know, like he had a cold or something, but you know, within a couple of takes, we managed to get everything we needed. And so, you know, you would have to be like listening, knowing that to know that that was an issue when watching those cartoons. That was when he had cancer.
Yeah. I heard about that. He actually told that story when I saw him live about how he had throat cancer. And it's like, and going by the timeline, he would have to have just, I don't know, recently recovered or whatever when he did Batman and Harley Quinn, where he had to sing.
Yeah,
I highly recommend checking out his recent biography, especially the the audiobook version, to find out exactly where they were in Animaniacs when that happened. You know, in New Animaniacs.
Yeah, that will be interesting. And like we say on the show, what else you got going on right now?
Pretty much. Anyway. Can we tell you a little bit more about Tress McNeil, or are we done?
We've talked about her before, so I think we're okay kind of skipping on.
Yeah. Let's go to Steve McCall, who previously was the voice of Marcy Palami.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. That makes sense.
Yeah, so Steve McCall did actually do the voice of Marcy Palami, which explains why he would come onto this show now.
Oh, by the way, did you know that, it's kind of relevant since that's where this came from. Did you know that Disney got sued over that Marsupilami show?
No, did not.
So, like I mentioned, it is based on a Belgian comic series itself, a spinoff of another one. So in that, it's like more of a nature show send-up, and Marsupilami doesn't say anything other than Hooba. Disney was supposed to make an entire show about Marsupilami and not have segments that didn't have anything to do with them.
Okay.
And so because of that, they were in breach of contract.
Ooh.
Fun.
I think there was like a more recent, like sadly lower budget, like French Marsupilami show that's more like the comic, but that might have been from lawsuit money.
Interesting.
It's probably why Marsupilami is on Disney Plus.
Yeah,
that would make sense. Yeah.
Hopefully that's not the reason Schnookums and Meat isn't on Disney Plus for the same. I don't know.
I don't think so.
The other interesting thing about Steve McCall is he was the voice of Must See TV on NBC.
Oh.
Yeah, he was the announcer that would talk about must-see TV. So if you grew up with NBC in the 90s and you remember must-see TV, he was the voice you always heard.
See, because I thought that was Townsend Coleman.
No, it does seem to be that he at least did part of it. I'm not saying that Townsend Coleman didn't do some of it, but it does seem he did part of it as well. I want to say that I absolutely love Husband as a character. Possibly my favorite character on the entire series.
Isn't did he you a feed weirdo? The,
did you feed the animals?
Feed the animals, honey?
Yeah, the animals and they're over there on the Davenport. And that's like, he has a very peculiar way of speaking that's like half really bizarre affectation of like, it's almost like an alien sort of heard English and decided to try to like, and now I will pretend to be human. Have you fed the animals yet? You know, it's like, and the other half is just like, he just stepped out of the 1940s or something. I don't know. It's such a great kind of mashup that it just had me just laughing so hard every time he spoke.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the way Husband is written is kind of like Bill Cop going maximum verbose. I feel like that's how he would write all the time if he weren't stopped.
Let me get my thesaurus and find the most obscure word for this. Yeah. I have that sometimes as a writer too, where I'm just like, what's the weirdest word I could put in here?
Yeah. It's kind of like how I had to make Luke stop writing the alliterative prose all the time because it was impossible for overseas to translate.
Yeah, that could be a problem. We
talked about all the characters of the Shinookums and Meat segments, but that's not all we have. We had two other segments that made up the show. Superhero Pith Possum and Cowboy Tex Tin Star.
Yes.
So let's talk about the other characters in those cartoons. Both of them, both main characters, voiced by Jeff Bennett. Pith Possum and Tex Tin Star. And definitely, I mean, I'm watching this and like, that's Johnny Bravo.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is. It's, you know, because, well, first of all, Bill's completely obsessed with Elvis. Like, when he and Kenny Matroni shared an office on Tasmania Development, they would just, like, do dueling Elvises and dueling Jack Bennies all the time. But, yeah, so this was, if you check the timeline, this is Jeff Bennett doing an Elvis-voiced lead before Johnny Bravo. About a year.
Yeah, when I was watching it, somebody messaged me and I was like, hey, give me a second, I'm watching something. And they said, what are you watching? And I said, apparently Johnny Bravo as a cowboy. Because it seems very much in that same vein. Even just kind of the way it's written, I think the characters accidentally have a very similar personality overlap.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, you tell Jeff Benny to do Elvis and he's going to do that voice.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't even the voice to me. I was like, I could see Johnny Bravo doing some of the things if you dropped him into the Old West. Like, some of these actions, I think, would have fit either character. So
Tex Tin Star is actually Johnny Bravo's ancestor.
Yeah, I fully accept that headcanon, yes.
And once Disney buys Time Warner, then it'll finally happen.
We will have the crossover we all demand. Pith Possum is a very different voice in that he does two different voices because he does Peter Possum, the secret identity of the hero Pith Possum. And the Peter Possum is one that I'm not sure I am personally familiar with Jeff doing a voice like that. From other things, I'm by no means a complete connoisseur of his work, but it was one that I was like, oh, that's kind of different. But Pith Possum is very much a Jeff Bennett kind of voice to me. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, that's definitely him.
Yeah, Jeff has a startling range and can completely fool me sometimes, like... I had no idea until I got to the end credits that Bradley Uppercrust III was him.
Yeah.
In Extremely Goofy Movie. Probably because this is just normal voice.
Yeah. But we did, of course, kind of talk about his back you know, back catalog of voices when we did Gargoyles. So he also not a stranger to the show.
Yep. Let's keep it Pit Possum. His sidekick, Obadiah the Wonder Raccoon, played by Patrick Zimmerman.
Yeah, who I don't think we've ever talked about.
I don't think so.
Before. He does have a little bit of a Disney background, that he did some voices for Tailspin. And all, but not, it seems like, a huge Disney catalog. Really seems like this and Tailspin are kind of it. He did voices here and there on Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. He did some of the Tom and Jerry kids. He was in the Metal Gear Solid video games as Revolver Ocelot.
Oh.
So there you go. But yeah, so it does seem that he is now retired and doesn't do any current voice acting, but had a really good career throughout the 90s and into the early 2000s. So.
All right. So staying with Pit Possum, his love interest, Doris Deer, April Witchell, who is the the official voice actress for Claire Bocow. So there's another Disney
connection. That makes sense.
The other Disney connection.
Mm. Yeah. And
as well as baby version Baby Huey. Or Baby Huey. Baby Herman.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course we have before talked about her father, Paul Winchell.
Yes.
On the show as well. So there you go. Bit of a family connection.
I guess Brad Garrett as Commander Stress.
Yes.
If you don't know who Brad Garrett is, he's everything. He's the, you know, sort of the character, you know, Krunk in Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah, this is like before he got, you know, really famous as a result of Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he was doing a lot of voice acting at this point, but like Bill would use him in everything.
Yeah. If you're still having trouble picturing Brad Garrett, you need to close your eyes and imagine a sitcom actor who is very large and has a very deep voice. Now, I know that you are thinking of the other guy. No, he is not that guy that is also on Family Guy. No, the other one is Brad Garrett. Yeah. Yeah, no, I
we're joke, talking about this guy. Not yeah, this guy.
That guy. Like you said, he is probably best known for Everybody Loves Raymond. But you know, he's got a pretty decent voice acting cred back there. He did voice on Tick, which we like to talk about now and then whenever it gets come up. And you know, he has a little bit of a Disney background where he is in Pocahontas 2, Bug's Life, Extremely Goofy Movie. He's in Finding Nemo. He's in Tarzan 2. He's in Cars. So, yeah.
It's that unmistakable voice. And once you hear that voice, you know that's Brad Garrett.
Yeah. So, yeah. I am sure we will be talking about him again before long.
All right. So, the other Animaniacs actor in this one, Jess Harnell as Lieutenant Tension in Pith Possum and Floyd the Insane Rattlesnake in Tex Ten Star.
And if you know, he does his Wayne Newton voice for seemingly every Pith Possum and every Tex Ten Star.
Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. One of the Tex Ten Stars had him doing at least two of his Beetle voices.
The Polite Coyotes, yeah.
Yeah, the Polite Coyotes. If you've never seen Jess Harnell do all four Beatles talking to each other, that is a thing you should witness. yeah, it's amazing to watch him do that. He did that in Comic Book the Movie, where there's just a scene of his character in a car just talking, and he talks about the difference in voices between the Beatles and how you have to do their voices. And the funny thing is that it has nothing else to do with anything in the movie, and it doesn't seem like anything his character should be saying. So I think they just accidentally had the camera rolling when Jess did this, like, behind the scenes, and they thought, there's no reason this character can't be talking about doing impressions. Because it's just such an impressive bit of him just doing all four of them kind of talking to each other at the same time. So bravo to Mark Hamill for leaving that in there.
They probably would have had him doing all four Polite Coyotes, except for, you know, once an actor gets past three voices in an episode, it's both discouraged and you have to pay them extra.
Oh, fun to know. I don't know when that will ever be useful information for me personally, but it's fun.
Well, in case you're sitting there wondering, hey, why didn't this guy do this voice that they should obviously be doing? That might be why.
Yeah.
And I do have a question about that coming up when we get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so...
I think we have a few more. Chafe from the Texas Star series, voiced by Charlie Adler, voice of Buster Bunny.
Yes.
And cow, and chicken, and red
cow
guy.
And chicken, yep.
And the big heads from Marco's Modern Life, yes. And, you know, yes. Charlie Adler is also one of the, you know, massive legends of voice acting working right now.
If you were a kid in the 90s, you know who Charlie Adler's... You know what his voice sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah. He once sent me a heart on Twitter, and not like he liked my tweet, like he actually sent me an emoji of a heart, and that was the best day of my life.
Aww.
I know. so anyway, yeah, love Charlie Adler. We have mentioned him before on the show, because we have talked about Buster Bunny before on the show, yes.
I think we talked about him with the Gummy Bears episode.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
And okay. I guess to wrap it up, I guess we can go with Jim Cummings as the narrator of the other two segments.
Oh, look, it's a Disney thing, and Jim Cummings is in it. You're all shocked.
I know. Do we really need to Frank Welker? Do we really need to go into Jim Cummings' impressive record?
Yeah, if you've ever listened to our show before, you've heard way too much about Jim Cummings. So he's Darkwing Duck. There we go. There you go. You know Jim Cummings.
Done and okay. Done.
All right, let's get into the actual, like, show.
Yeah, like we said, the show was split up into three segments. Shunikums and Meat, Pith Possum, and Tex Ten Star. So we're going to do things a little bit different. We're going to talk about each segment individually and talk about shorts from those segments. So, and all of these were picked by Kyle. So,
yes.
So these are
my personal favorites.
Yeah. It was his pick. He gets to pick the episodes. So the first short we're going to talk about from Shunikums and Meat is IQ-U2, which actually was on the Mercy Bellamy show first.
Yes. Yeah. And so I wanted to pick at least one that was one of the Mercy Bellamy ones. In part because, like, you know, it's a slightly different crew. Like, Lynn Naylor was still there at this point, and so, you know, the Shunikums and Meat designs are hers. It's, you know, they had said to Bill, hey, we want you to make a cat and dog cartoon. Please pitch us a cat and dog cartoon. And then the other two segments, I think, were just like, Bill, pitch us whatever you want.
Mm. Yeah, as long as you have the cat and dog there to hold it together, I think you can kind of slot whatever you want in the other spots.
Very much. So let's go through the plot really quickly before we go into the cartoon proper. Shunikums teases Meat about him being a little bit slow, and he gets a device that makes himself smarter and starts pulling pranks on Shunikums, who also gets a device that makes him smarter, and they pull more pranks on Meat, ending up in a full-on prank war.
Which eventually ends in the destruction of the planet.
After they've made their brains giant and grotesque. See, this is where we go beyond where Tom and Jerry would stop.
Yeah. I don't think Tom and Jerry ever ended the world.
What a first episode here, the destruction of the world. Where do you go from there?
to the next segment. Apparently, you destroy it a couple of more times. Because yeah. at least two of these have a kind of Earth destruction as part of it. And at least one of the Tech's 10 stars also yes. has the destruction of Earth that we watched. Yeah. So why did you pick this one, Kyle?
I picked this one both because it was, I think, the strongest of the marsupilami ones. I think it's a particularly good-looking Shnookums in meat, and I also have a cell from this one on my wall.
Ooh, lucky.
Well, you've met Bill Cobb.
We're currently working together on a secret project.
Ooh.
But also, Bill Cobb was, correct me if I'm wrong, and I really hope I'm not, was he not also the voice of Manfish the Fishman?
He was.
Yes, and I love Manfish the Fishman from Mighty Patch Swords, so yeah.
As well as King Chili Donut in the Season 2 two-parter, The Incredible Tiny Warriors.
Yes. King Chili Donut, a name which I love so much. Because I haven't decided, do I want to eat a chili donut, or do I just like the way it sounds?
I definitely want to eat a chili donut.
That, actually, I would probably be down for that. I've probably eaten weirder things than a chili donut.
I've had curry pan, and I feel like it's probably very similar.
Yeah, okay. I could see that. So, yes. Anyway, where were we? Tuesday, get back on track.
So, yeah. To me, like, you just kind of, like, start to get the beginnings of their characters here, because I felt like they developed as they went along. And you kind of, like... In particular, Meat, who I feel like became more nuanced as the show went on and became like a very specific brutish idiot who, like, you know, would go from being, you know, destructive bully to, you know, dumb friend, depending on what the context was. And I like that about him.
Mm. Yeah, I really did think that his character varied more than Shnookums did. Over the ones you sent us.
Yeah. A lot of Meat's personality is context-based, and Shnookums is just kind of Shnookums all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it says a lot that these two have gained genius-level intelligence, and their main goal of using this genius-level intelligence is just to bug the other.
Yes.
Not to do anything else. Like, okay, I am now a genius. I am going to mess with this other guy that I live with.
Yeah, just because you're a genius doesn't make you not an a-hole.
Yeah. I do also like that. It's like, could we improve the world for cat or dog kind? No. We will just bug my housemate.
Not considered for a moment.
Yeah. Not even close.
Go ahead.
Oh, I do love the series of pranks. Like, the kind of weird... methodology that they use to prank each other.
Yes.
And I do love the first thing, the way it starts with Meat barking at the gate because the mailman has come through.
And as a dog owner yourself.
Yeah, and Shnookums saying, like, you're so dumb, even if you knew it was me opening the gate, you would still bark at the gate because that's what you're trained to do. And does kind of prove Shnookums right. There's that whole scene of, like, Meat desperately trying not to bark because he knows it's Shnookums. He knows it's not the mailman. He knows the house isn't in danger. But all the little doggy power in him is like, bark! Bark at the gate!
Yeah.
So, yeah, I that's such a cat and dog dynamic.
Yeah.
I think that's what I like most about Shnookums and Meat, is that unlike Ren and Stimpy, who are interesting characters, but I don't really feel are cat and dog.
No.
They're just an odd couple that happen to be in the body of cat and dog.
But yeah, every now and then they, like, might be pushed in that position, but, like, that makes it all the weirder because they're not presented in that way. Like, you know, when they're owned by George Licker, it's like, oh, you just kind of own these two guys.
Yeah, yeah, it's so strange. But Shnookums and Meat really do feel like a dog and a cat.
Yeah, there's definitely the dog. I mean, yeah, the dog-cat dynamic is definitely there. You can tell that they are, you know, Shnookums acts like a cat, Meat acts like a dog, and the characteristics of each. Like the, you know, don't give a darn attitude that most cats have. All we need is Snookums knocking stuff over just because he could.
Yeah, I mean, Snookums' perfect day is sitting around being lazy and being pampered.
Yeah,
As a cat that... owner, Kyle.
Yes. Yeah. As Spiral, you know, sleeps lazily at the foot of the bed at which I'm sitting.
Yeah. And I didn't get that until right now. It's like, Kyle's a cat owner, Kiki's a dog owner. Perfect, perfect episode.
So should we, like, be pranking each other or attempting to... I don't know how that dynamic works.
I think we should instead continue talking about cartoons.
Yes.
That is the perfect dynamic for the both of us, I feel.
And I know it's a cartoon, but I kind of feel sorry for the poor mouse that Meat just dunks in glue.
I think it's set up that it's a toy. I think it's pretty clear.
Oh, you know,
that he gets like a catnip mouse or something.
Yeah.
A toy mouse and dips it in glue. Because we actually do see Meat interact in some of these other shorts with other animals. And he seems very kind toward other animals. So I don't think he would have just grabbed a random mouse and sacrificed it for the sake of it.
It's also an early cartoon before the characters were ever actually fully formed.
Yeah, that too. But
We never see Meat want to actively hurt anyone who isn't Snookums.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I very definitely got the idea that it was a toy. Like, it never once crossed my mind.
It looks like a mousy toy to me.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go with that. And it's just like these two, the pranks get more and more bigger and more dangerous. It's like, and like when I say war, I mean literal war, because these two are driving tanks at the end of this episode.
There was a dog and cat missile chasing each other in space.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a great gag. I love that gag of the dog and cat missile chasing each other around around the galaxy and coming back and hitting Earth. And turning Earth into like an apple core.
Yep, yes.
You know, the very cartoony apple core idea. Yeah, I love that.
It's like almost mirroring the fate of Planet X from Duck Dodgers.
Yes.
Yeah. I will say, since we're just starting off here, I want to know what husband and wife do for a living, because they live in like a freaking mansion. That house is huge.
Yeah.
All the exterior shots of the house, it's like a three-story mansion with like a semi-detached garage, like a pool. And I feel a giant like wall
that's the
around
kind of
it.
Thing you like never had to explain in 80s and 90s cartoons that people like look for an explanation now.
They just have it.
You know, like Frank Grimes pointing out like the Simpsons living in a mansion.
Yeah, but the thing is the Simpsons live in like a sort of a house that's just like slightly above them in pay grade. This is like a freaking MTV Cribs situation.
Well, maybe they bought it in some sort of housing crash. They got it cheap.
Yeah, maybe.
I can tell you without doubt that if I asked Bill this question, he would say, "Who cares?"
Yeah, and the funny thing is that I care, and I have always cared. I was that kid. I was that one weird child. That would sit there and be like, but they live in such a huge house. Is that how they can afford to rebuild it every week when Snookums and Meat completely like waste this place? Because they destroy the house in like every single episode.
And something that allows husband to be eccentric.
Yeah, it's some, maybe he's like an inventor or a tech guy or something. I don't know.
Who knows? All right, is that all we can take about that little short?
Yeah.
Let's move on to the second short that Kyle picked. Ow! Hey!
This is my absolute favorite, Snookums and Meat.
And you have to say it like that, because that's how
it's said. Ow! Hey!
That's how it's said in the cartoon. Plot, this goes to plot. Snookums and Meat are playing a game of baseball. Meat is repeatedly hit in the head with the ball, violating CTE regulations. This dog has a concussion, get him off the field.
Yeah. The funny thing about this is that I was injured this morning and watched this episode pretty high on pain medication.
Wow, considering the way this particular cartoon ends.
Yeah, I was like sitting there and through my like drug-induced haze, I was like, this is a wildly appropriate episode for today.
Wow, enough of this. I'm going to watch Midnight Gospel.
Yeah. Ironically, I was partially injured by my dog.
So. Ow!
Yeah. My dog was begging for... I was already injured. I had injured a muscle on my chest, and my dog decided that he wanted snuggles and decided to take a running leap into the recliner I was sitting in to get snuggles. And normally he would have, like, stopped and all before he actually, like, got near me. He would have just, like, jumped onto the footrest and then, like, walked toward me. But I had a blanket over me that has, like, a very slick texture. And his paws hit that and completely flew out from under him. And I got 50 pounds of muscly dog right in the chest.
Oh.
And, yeah, I mean, that hit me like a train. And exacerbated the injury I already had. So that was my morning.
And then you watched Ao Hei.
And then I watched Ao Hei. So yeah. There's not a lot to this one as far as plot. It's just...
Well, no, I asked Bill, this cartoon really was an excuse to see how far they could stretch the idea of a guy getting hit in the head with a baseball.
Yeah, I love how absurd it gets. Like at one point Schnookums hits the baseball and it goes up into the atmosphere, actually breaks through into space, and then comes back down as a fireball.
Yes.
To hit Meat in the head.
As an already injured Meat is like talking backwards to an insect.
Yes, that was actually my favorite part, is by that point, Meat is so far gone that he's just saying the most hilarious nonsense, which Frank Welker absolutely sells like it is Shakespeare. I love it.
I mean, this is a man whose professional job is to talk in a dog voice.
Yes. And he's good at it.
Here he is talking in a dog voice, as his profession would want.
Scoob comes out next month, kids.
Yeah, I actually have Scoob brand Scooby snacks that I have been feeding to my dog. He loves them. Yeah, they're even baked with like character pictures on them and everything. Oh. Adorable.
There's a scene before that that you can also see some shots from in the opening theme that's just like, you know, they show a bunch of shots and a bunch of different angles of Schnookums hitting the ball, and then just like over and over all the different ways that Eddie Fitzgerald could figure out how to storyboard a dog getting hit in the head with a baseball, and it's just so pure cartoon.
Yeah, the first one really got me, because the first one actually hits him in one of his eyes.
Yeah.
And there's this long, painful sequence of his eye, like, trying to blink the ball out. And it's just so, like, protracted in the, like, gruesomeness of, yeah, I love it.
I love cartoons where you can just have a thin concept and see how many different variations you can. Like, when I came up with the idea for the goat episode of Mighty Magic Swords, I was like, this is my Ao Hei.
I would agree with you on that. That is one of my favorite episodes of Magic Swords, and it's just, for those of you who have yet to see it, one, go to Hulu and watch it, and two, there is an episode that is just about one of the main characters desperately trying to ride a goat he found, and it is brilliant. Nope.
It is the best Roadrunner cartoon to never get made.
Right.
Yeah, it is absolutely, I felt that Roadrunner idea to it, yeah.
So pretty much my favorite part is kind of what you were talking about before, but the fact that Schnookums kind of hits a bunt and the ball is going ever so slowly, and then
snails are beating it.
Yeah, snails are beating it, and then it just lands on a sprinkler, and just the sprinklers go off and shoots it right into his head. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It's like Suka was kind of taking pity on him by hitting the bunt, and it went wrong anyway.
This is also kind of the one episode where I don't think Schnookums is ever actually trying to hurt Meat at any point.
He even says you need to go to the doctor. Say, no, we're fine. I just got a little loopy. We're good.
Yeah, this is like the only one where I don't feel any animosity between these two. It's just an accident.
Like, yeah, it's just like you get to see them kind of just being friends in this one because, you know, like there's nothing against what Schnookums wants to do in the world in this one. He just wants to be, you know, lazy, have a little kind of like minor recreation, and Meat's also on board with it. We're just going to play catch. And so, you know, there's no reason for Schnookums to be a jerk in this one, so he's not.
Yeah, yeah. I actually liked that dynamic of just the, like, I'm not intentionally trying to hurt you, but that keeps happening.
Yeah.
And a lot of us has been in that situation. It's like, I don't mean to do this, and oh, dang. At least maybe just me. I've been in that situation with, I think I've been in that situation with Kiki, where it's like, I did not mean to hit you like that. Yeah. Ow! I'm sorry.
Hey. Although with my medical issues, if you breathe too heavily near me, I injure something. So, you know, it's going to happen.
I want to give bonus points to the scene where Schnookums puts Meat's head out of the car window that he's driving, being cat, to give him some air, and he hits like all of these, you know, improbably placed signs over and over.
Yeah, I love the gag in that because he's actually driving from their house to the city to take Meat to the hospital, and he drives down a road, and as soon as he puts Meat's head out the window, the road becomes this really bizarre, like, 7-mile cul-de-sac lined with billboards, so that he has to drive all the way to the end of it, and then he curves around and drives all the way back where he came. With Meat just hitting the billboard like every 2 seconds on the way. I laughed so hard when I saw that when he turned around. I was like, it's like a 7-mile long cul-de-sac with nothing on it but billboards.
I like how the world will bend its will towards making cartoon gags happen in these cartoons.
Yep. Logic. Gotta love it. And then in the end, poor Schnookums ends up worse off than Meat because he's in a full body cast.
Of course he does. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved everything about this one. It's just one long visual gag after another, and I'm sure that the animators had a field day with this.
And then, because we don't know how to end this cartoon, we meet the safety chinchilla.
Yes, and I loved the safety chinchilla, like, just the chinchilla with, like, pillows strapped all to his body and a helmet.
I've seen this character in another cartoon, because this character looks so familiar. Maybe this is the only one that resonated with me from this show. I remember this character from another cartoon, but I don't know where it was.
He does look a little bit like, besides looking a little bit like Pip the Possum, he also looks a little bit like Snuck from Mad Jack the Pirate.
Maybe. I don't remember Mad Jack that much. I just remember the idea of, you know, this character with the pillows all over him. I don't... Maybe it's just something that just stuck with me. I don't know. And the whole... the idea of the camera going into Schnookums. Granted, the cartoon ends before we come out the other side. But
Because VSNP probably isn't going to allow that. So instead, here have a safety chinchilla.
Yeah. I'm saying that it reminds me of the scene from Cool World.
I have not seen Cool World in decades. You might need to remind me.
So there's a scene in Cool World where a bunch of the characters are falling off a building, and the camera goes through one of the characters inside. You see the going through the throat, going through the stomach, going through the intestines, and out the other side. And as you come out the other side, you see, you know, the end as they keep on falling down. The camera somehow turns around, watching them hit the ground. Mm. Can't do that. Excuse me. Can't do that in a Saturday or a weekday afternoon Disney cartoon.
Yeah.
I was going to say Saturday morning, but, you know, this is weekday afternoon by this point.
Right.
The The interesting thing to me about the Save Cheech and Chill, the funniest gag to me about that, other than the just having the pillows like tied onto it at every point, is that he's like, well, kids, 90% of accidents happen at home, so be careful or something, and then he just wanders off.
Yeah.
Like, so, well, we need to end this with a moral. Be safe, kids. There's just a moral. Yeah. The thing. Wheel of morality, turn.
Yeah. It was such a great kind of just... There's a joke between the creators of Venture Brothers that Jackson will work very hard to wrap up an episode, but when it's Doc's turn to write an episode, he'll just kind of stop. Like, he'll get to the end of whatever he wanted to do with that episode, and then he's just bored, so he'll just have a character be like, well, guess that's all, and then they just end. Like, there's no kind of, like, denouement or, like, any kind of wrap-up. And to me, that felt like a very kind of Doc Hammer thing to do, of like, we're done with the entire reason we wrote this episode, yeah. So, you know, Safety Chinchilla says, be safe, kids. Okay, bye.
But yeah, I think that Aohei specifically is just a really, truly great cartoon that, you know, clearly somebody, a bunch of people gave a damn about, and so... It's this kind of thing that, like, makes me go, really, guys, when people just dismiss this show as a Ren and Stimpy knockoff.
Yeah, that to me did not feel at all like anything Ren and Stimpy would have ever done.
No, like I said, it definitely feels something out of Tom and Jerry.
But not even Tom and Jerry. I thought that that IQ felt very Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this one felt like its own thing to me. Like, I'm not sure what other show I would have seen do this. Maybe an Animaniacs episode.
Maybe.
That would.
I could see it. Although there would have been a lot more talking if it was an Animaniacs episode.
Yeah. But you could see something like, you know. This felt to me like maybe a Slappy Squirrel bit.
Yeah,
where she's with somebody else and they keep getting hit over and over again while she makes wisecracks or something. But yeah, this kind of felt like its own thing to me. So I really liked watching this one because I was like, okay, I get the point of view of this show now. It doesn't feel like Ren and Stimpy. It doesn't feel like, you know, Tom and Jerry. It just feels like Schnuckums and Meat, which I liked.
All right. Do you want to move on?
Yep.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Schnookums. The summary. Meat thinks he's accidentally killed Schnookums. And Schnookums uses this to trick Meat into thinking he's a zombie.
Yeah. This is actually another one of the marsupilami ones. And I like that Disney allowed this to happen on Saturday morning.
Yeah, and the fact that they actually say the word dead, which you did not hear in Disney cartoons at the time.
Yeah.
This reminded me sort of two other things. One that I think definitely came after this, so, you know, definitely not derivative at all. It just reminded me of it, which was a little bit of Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Yeah, ooh, sure. Yeah, definitely.
But also, there's one point where Meat, during the section where Meat thinks he's actually killed Schnookums, that feels so much like that Looney Tunes cartoon with the dog and the cat where he thinks he's turned the cat into a cookie.
Feed the Kitty with
Pussyfoot
and Mark Antony. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's carrying the little cookie cat around on his back. Like, that, to me, at one point, Meat kind of reaches that same little, like, oh, my poor kitty friend, you know?
This is like the horror movie equivalent of that.
Yeah. I love that this is at least the first time I had seen it on screen, that Schnookums has a throne.
Yes.
Which I love. He's got, like, a little cat bed built into, like, a little throne, which is, like, owner, a cat thing.
That, like, defines his character immediately. Like, that shows you what Schnookums wants.
Yeah.
And that shows you how the humans treat Schnookums.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like, you know, he's a little baby kitty, and the way they describe it, oh, you know, Snookums is so fun to be around. He's so full of life. He's our little baby kitty, and that all that is just the guilt that's getting into me. To, oh my God, I killed him.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning, there is a shot in which Meat literally laughs his butt off.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do they get that patent to censors?
But it's
not imitable behavior.
Yeah. I love how it starts off with the two of them watching like a really, you know, B-movie horror flick from the 50s or whatever. And Snookums being completely unfazed by it and Meat thinking it is the scariest thing in history. Because if you've ever been a horror movie fan that ends up at movie night with somebody who cannot handle a horror movie, that is the exact dynamic where it's just like Snookums looking over like, this wimpy little baby movie cannot have possibly made you scared.
This might be my favorite intro of any of the episodes, because just that beautiful image of the two of them on the couch and their completely different attitudes, and it's just beautifully drawn. Worth mentioning, that horror movie there may be in part an excuse to get Lynn Naylor to draw a Lynn Naylor girl. Lynn Naylor is known for the way that she, you know, draws cartoon girls, and kind of the way... like, the way cartoon girls are attributed to John Kay are really John imitating Lynn.
That is good to know. I don't think I ever knew that before.
Yeah.
But I love how it starts off of just, like, you know, them fighting over a horror movie, at which point Snookums kind of gets accidentally knocked out. Or whatever, and Meat thinks that Snookums is dead.
And Snookums is fully aware. He's not knocked off for very long because he gets plays along with it. Yeah. Again, part of that prankness that we saw in the first episode here.
Yeah. But I love, like, Meat just kind of, like, taking him outside and hiding the body.
Yep.
See, that to me is the part that it's the most amazing that Disney let happen. They just let him hide the body.
Well, yeah, he's not actually dead.
Well, he's not actually dead, so it's okay.
Yeah,
I don't know that playing hide the living body's any better.
Yeah, it is a very weird moral for a cartoon. Like, remember, kids, if one of your friends accidentally gets beamed in the head and dies while you're having a play date, just hide the body. It'll be fine.
And then he just goes up and just turns all the pictures around. Like, no, if I get rid of all the pictures of Snookums, I'll forget all about him. Yeah. It's all good.
I didn't need that stupid cat anyway. I love it.
Yeah, I thought this one was worth showing you guys because, like, I like that even in, like, the initial five shorts, like, Bill was like, okay, well, what if we did a psychological thriller?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can really feel it on me. Like, bravo to the animators, because they draw, like, every stage of his, like, grief and shame and terror. And there are some good, like, freeze frames from this one.
Yeah.
I love, and Kyle and I have talked about this as well, but I love... not only animation drawings, but any kind of cartoony, comic-y kind of drawings where you can look at a character and immediately know every thought that's going on in their head just from the way their expression is drawn. And there are so many of them in this for Meat. Like, you know, pause it at any moment and you know exactly what's going on in Meat's brain at that point.
So, yeah, and eventually we get Snookums coming back in with the zombie mask, saying trick or treat, so I assume this was supposed to be a Halloween episode.
It's probably, like, you know, the most threatening thing they were allowed to have Snookums say there.
Yeah.
I don't know when it aired on Marsupilami, but it aired again as part of Snookums and Meat on the 13th of March. So.
Yeah.
So although, at least I mean, I guess show, if you think
about when Saturday morning cartoons aired. It was usually some point in September when they would start, you know, back in the network days. So it's conceivable that this aired in, like, early October.
Possible. Yeah. So I absolutely thought this was great because I love the part where Shinookums kind of turns it around on him. And Meat tries to do the same thing of like, oh, I'll play dead and make you think you killed me. And then Meat's like, nope, just gonna dump your body in the river.
Yeah.
Shinookums like, nope, gonna do, you know.
Oh, and if only like,
I'm not dead. I'm not dead. And Shinookums is like, no, don't play with my emotions that way. And just like dumps him in the river.
No, chill. Again, that's what a cat would do.
Yeah, it's such perfect cat behavior. And yes, it turns out, I looked it up. This aired the night of October the 30th.
Oh, hey!
On Marsupilami, 1993. So there you go.
So yeah, this technically would be a Halloween episode.
Yeah, this was indeed their Halloween episode. Love it.
Although, Bill, it's a cartoon he would have done anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked this one a lot. I think that the whole kind of way of Meat going like, I'll play it back on him, and then Shinookums acting exactly like a cat would, like, I really do not care. It's so good. What else we got?
All right, so let's go to the next episode, Cabin Fever. I know a lot of people are getting this right now, so we'll go into that.
But it starts off with something that happened to you last night, Kyle.
Oh, yeah, that's right, an earthquake.
Yeah. Let's go to the plot here. Stuck in the house after an earthquake, Shinookums and Meat eat some expired food to survive and have hallucinations afterwards.
Yeah.
We are 2 days past 420, guys, as we record this.
Yeah. I liked the setup for this, that they have an earthquake, and then they're like, no, what if the humans don't come back? There's no food in the house because the humans just went out to get us food. I love that setup. That just that one quick line of like, no, the humans just went out to get us food. There's no food in the house right now.
God, what were the? There was a date on those cocktail weenies, wasn't it like 1954 or something?
Yeah, 1950. Yeah, 1950 something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love when they go through everything in the house first, including the mustard and chutney that they finished the night before.
Right.
It's like, we so just finished.
Where did the humans go to shop if they were gone for 4 days? Because I said, we can survive.
I assume they were also subdued by the results of the earthquake.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the earthquake actually does, like, collapse enough of the ground that the house is, like, on a little island. So yeah. It probably took the humans a while just to find a way across the gap in the chasm. Because when the humans come home, that chasm is still there. Like, the house is still kind of, like, floating on this little damaged island. So, yeah. But I love when they get the cocktail weenies, which they find by accident. And at one point, they're going to eat them, and Meat's like, but are they supposed to be blue, though?
So gross.
Yeah.
But, we could be, you know, nitpicky saying, dogs are colorblind, he wouldn't know.
Dogs are not actually colorblind. They just do not see as full a spectrum of colors as humans do because of the way their eyes are. But they can distinguish colors, and some dogs even have a favorite color.
Oh.
So, yeah. Fun fact.
Also, it's a damn cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah, if I don't get to ask about the size of their house, you don't get to ask about me having color blindness. All right. But,
File that one under just repeat to your shows. Just repeat to yourself. It's just a show. I should probably just relax.
Yeah.
You know me. When have I ever relaxed at a show?
True.
So I love the fact that the hallucination is, of course, because they're so hungry, a whole bunch of various foods, including many, many life-size cocktail weenies. And yeah. I love the introduction of they're hallucinating now, because they're sitting on the couch and a cocktail weenie walks up and sits down, and Schnookums looks over at it like, you know, theoretically thinking, like, why is there a cocktail weenie sitting on my couch? And the weenie looks at him and then moves over a little bit, like, oh, I'm sorry, was I crowding you? And goes back to watching TV. And I love that little moment. Of course, the hallucination cocktail weenie wouldn't find anything weird in this. So if the cat is staring at him, it must be that he's too close on the couch.
And this is a shared hallucination, because everything, they're sharing the exact same dream in this whole thing. Which, I get it, cartoon.
Yeah. Hey, they ate the same weenies.
Yeah. It's got to have the same, like, mold or fungus or whatever's causing this.
Yep.
There's a lot of great drawings in this cartoon, but I'm particularly fond of the drawing of the two of them hugging each other, you know, looking horrible when the humans come home.
Yeah. On the couch, curled on the Davenport, excuse me.
Davenport.
Yeah, curled up in terror on the, at the edge.
It was a bad trip, man. It was a bad trip.
Yeah. The what this one has that I really like is it has one of my favorite cartoon gags that I feel doesn't get enough credit, which is the eyeballs in darkness gag.
Yeah.
Which it does twice. Where all the lights go out and you just see, you know, eyeballs moving. And my favorite bit is at one point, I think it's Meat. Meat's eyeballs split off and go in separate directions as he's running from something.
Yep.
But I love the eyeballs in darkness as a genre of visual gag in cartoons. And it doesn't get the credit I think it deserves as a really solid gag that can do many, many things in the course of an episode. So
I'm fond of it too, and I can't remember if we ever did it in Magiswords.
I do not remember. I think maybe there's one in the Desolation of Grupp when they first come into Grupp's cave.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think there is an Eyeballs in Darkness right before they light the lighter in that one. But yeah, I absolutely love that as a style of gag, and I love that it got used so well in this episode, and twice. So, yeah. love this one, but this is another one that's not so much on the plot, and is just more on the visual gags, so, you know,
yep.
not much more we can talk about.
Yep. So let's move on to the final Schnookums and Meat short we're going to talk about. What a turkey! It's Thanksgiving! It's our Thanksgiving episode! And Meat wants to protect his new turkey friend, while Schnookums is ready to turn it into Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for some reason, the humans, they just got a turkey, because, you know, they want the freshest turkey available for Thanksgiving. So just get a live one, and then
not they, husband, because there's actually a great
wife's scene. Not on board.
Yeah,
there's a great scene with wife being like, "Well, what are we supposed to do with it?" And he's like, "Well, honey, you take a hatchet and you de-head him." And like,
the way they describe this is like you could tell they have to word this in such a way to get past censors.
Yeah, it's
which
such
only
a-
made it funnier.
Yeah, especially because Meat is trying to work out like what they're talking about. It's like, live turkey plus hatchet equals turkey on a platter. They're going to kill him. Oh, no. It just takes Meat so long to figure out like what they're talking about. And I love it. But I love the whole thing of like husband being like, no, it'll be fresher that way. It'll be great, darling. And she's like, do it yourself. Why couldn't we have just gone to the store?
Wife actually makes the point. It could have just gone to the store and got a turkey. Didn't need to get a live one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as we're gradually piecing together, husband's a freak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like are any of the ones I listed here the one where there's just like a casual scene where the husband is being used as a wheelbarrow?
No, but no. You've got to find that one and send it to me. That sounds hilarious. But yeah, this is where we really see Meat's character go in a slightly different way, is that he's really gentle. And he just wants to, like, you know, save the turkey and give it a hug and send it off to, you know, the Caribbean or wherever they are at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Like, admittedly, if you were trying to make a case for Schnookums and Meat not being Ren and Stimpy, this isn't the episode you would want to go with.
Yeah.
But it's also really frigging funny, and so I wanted to show it to you.
Another rare instance of using the word dead.
Yes.
Because, again, Saturday morning cartoons, you can't really say the D word. But they found a way to make it happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the rules were a lot looser when we were kids. There's some really dark stuff from our childhood.
I can tell you firsthand, it also has a lot to do with who's paying attention.
Yeah.
Because sometimes on Magisorts we could say it, and other times on Magisorts we could absolutely not say it.
Yeah.
Signs of life.
Yeah. I've heard so many weird horror stories from various people about the bizarre, like, dealings with S&P, just trying to, like, figure out what was fair game and what wasn't. So, I can totally believe that. It's like, oh, we got Bob again. Bob won't let us do anything. I liked this one, but it I don't know. It's so weird to see. I mean, cats are obligate carnivores in reality, but, you know, dogs can have a slightly. I mean, they are carnivores, but they have a little bit of leeway in what they can eat. But again. Thinking too much into it, but it really like I guarantee you that there is some adult about our age out there that saw this episode as a kid and became a lifelong vegan because of it. Because this is such a strangely impactful. I was about to eat lunch, and I've got, like, chicken fingers for lunch, and now I kind of don't want to eat that. Like, Meat was making me feel so bad about my lunch. Like,
what if these chicken fingers were Frank Wilker?
Yeah!
Yeah.
I can see Frank Wilker just doing, like, really sad clucking in a booth somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen footage of Frank Walker doing way weirder things.
Yes.
Of course, the ultimate guy doing a chicken voice in a booth gag has to come via the lovely Alan Tudyk when he was doing Moana.
Yep.
Because there is footage of him, like, doing, like, really terrified clucking into a microphone. And then he stops and he looks at the behind-the-scenes camera and he goes, I went to Juilliard. Which is just, like, my favorite Alan Tudyk moment in all of history. Just, like, insane clucking noises, and then I went to Juilliard. So, yeah, I think of Frank Welker in much the same way. I do not think he went to Juilliard, but good for him. If they would pay me to make animal sounds, that would absolutely be my career right now.
Done that.
Yeah. One of us has lived that dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I like this one too, just because even though it made me feel very bad about my lunch, I love the thing of they finally, you know, Meat lets the turkey go, and then Schnookums is like, what are the humans going to do to us when they realize we've let their Thanksgiving dinner go? And then it's like, oh, crap. And then they run away to an island with the turkey. Like, which Schnookums is still trying to eat.
Yeah.
Like, in that final moment of Schnookums just being like, yeah, he's a doll, I love him, like, grabs a knife and fork and goes after him, like.
And I do love the fact that they've, at the end, they kind of say that, the turkey was very intelligent the whole time and kind of knew how to get out of that situation.
Yeah, but Meat loves him because he's, like, even dumber than Meat originally. He's just like, oh, the turkey doesn't know if the turkey's in on it the whole time.
And then he is at the end, you know, getting suntan oil put on him by a bikini babe.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last of the Schnookums and Meat, you know, specific character shorts, I kind of love that we end with Schnookums having learned absolutely nothing.
Yep.
That feels like a theme in the series. And Schnookums has learned absolutely nothing from this. So as we have reached the end of Schnookums and Meat, I'm going to say this is my favorite of the three segments by far.
Ah.
I think it's the actual Schnookums and Meat segments are my personal favorite. I think they're the most consistent in the writing, the most consistently funny to me personally. And I absolutely, watching these sold me on the show as a whole, like, very easily. I absolutely love these two characters.
Yeah, I could definitely see a three-segment show with just the Schnookums and Meat shorts.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to hear that, because, you know, this has been my favorite TV cartoon for a long time, and, you know, the reaction I usually get is, really?
No, I absolutely, about the second short, I think when I got to Al Hay, I was like, I see why Kyle likes this. This is a very Kyle show. Yeah.
Yeah, you can probably tell how this has defined a lot of my cartoon-making sensibilities.
Yeah, I understand your work as an animator a lot better now.
Yeah.
Your
writing style.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it, yeah. So we've got two other things to go through, so let's get right into it.
All right, the second segment of a regular Schnookums and Meat show would be Pit Possum, Super Dynamic Possum of Tomorrow! A superhero show about this character Pit Possum. It's your typical superhero. It's definitely reminds me a bit of Darkwing Duck, but more on the crazy side.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about this versus a lot of other superhero parodies is that it is not done out of love. This was like in the 90s where we were at peak having to take superheroes seriously, like Grimdark seriously. And Bill cannot stand that.
I would love to hear that man rant about Zack Snyder, because I'm sure there are, like, some really good rants in there about Zack Snyder.
Yeah, and all of the titles of each of these episodes definitely echo that, the idea of making fun of the grimdark superheroes of the 90s. Do you want to go into it, or do you want to talk about
the character? Yeah, go ahead and give us the first title.
The Phantom Mask of the Dark Black Darkness of Black. See what I'm talking about here?
give us the quick plot breakdown.
The Easter Bunny starts a crime wave by using a potion that makes him large.
Easter Bunny.
Giant Easter Bunny. And we actually get a sort of an origin story of Pit Possum.
Yeah.
Not that it makes any sense and will never be referred to again in the entire rest of the series.
I like the fact that he was an ordinary laboratory possum, like those exist.
And it also makes no sense, because then we establish that Possum City is a thing and it's all anthropomorphic animals, and why would a lab possum even exist?
Yeah.
Well, then look at Mickey in the brain, and then there's how many anthropomorphic animals are in the Animaniacs world.
Well, I guess so, but usually Pinky and the Brain were taking place in an otherwise human world that, you know, unless the Warners were running through it for a cameo, it was mainly not, you know.
Yeah, you don't really see other anthropomorphic animals in the Pinky and the Brain shorts, except for Ann Larry.
Yeah.
I mean, Ann Larry is the kind of one real caveat to that is that,
yeah, I mean, like, I guess there's a few others, but they're all other experiments.
The only other one I can think of is the most recent one with the Rescue Rangers and DuckTales.
Yeah. But yeah, I I think it's kind of hilarious that they're just like, yeah, he was a lab possum, and that then something went horribly wrong by shoving goo down his throat.
Now he's
like
a superhero.
Scientists do. Now he's a superhero. Shut up. Don't think about it.
Yeah, it's basically, well, I guess we're supposed to have an origin. Here it is. I hate superheroes.
this is another one where it's kind of, you know, not Johnny Bravo, but definitely Jeff Pettit as a superhero possum.
Yep.
The Easter Bunny was kind of funny to me because I like that not only do we get an origin story, but immediately we get an Arkham Asylum.
Yes.
That this world has, like, its own version of Arkham Asylum, which is Interesting Valley Sanatorium or something. I don't know what right, call right. it, but it's, like, Interesting Valley is the name of it, which I love.
And so this being the first Pith Possum, I guess this is our first instance of Jess Harnell doing his Wayne Newton.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting that you thought that you say Wayne Newton because I
actually no, this one's his first Jerry, isn't it?
Yeah, this is his first Jerry because I was gonna say like there are two characters that I really was like he's just Jerry Lewis in this.
Yeah, this and Floyd the Plum Loco Rattlesnake, who we'll talk
yeah.
about.
Yeah, but I love the fact that it's the Easter Bunny is getting released from the asylum. Like, oh, you're cured now, Mr. Bunny. So I love there's a whole backstory we never see where just one day it was like, the Easter Bunny has gone crazy and must be put into an asylum for the good of all society.
Although, it's perfect Bill Cop logic that, yes, the Easter Bunny was in an insane asylum and we don't need to explain this.
Yeah.
Explanations will not improve the situation.
And but they do have a excuse me. They have that little thing at the end where he's not the real Easter Bunny. He was only an impersonator. After calling him the Easter Bunny, even as he's being released from the asylum, like
yes, you would almost think that was addressing a note late in the game.
Yeah,
that's immediately what I thought of at the end. I was like, somebody in the studio saw this and was like. Kids are going to think the Easter Bunny's really an evil supervillain.
You mean he's not?
I love how little, and we talk about this on the show all the time, I find it interesting how little credit we as a society give children.
Yeah.
Yep. yes, we decide an awful lot of things about the way they think.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure that there are that many kids that would see a cartoon and be like, no, the Easter Bunny's evil now. Like, it's if you're at the age to believe in the Easter Bunny and your parents have done that, which my parents never did, My parents thought telling me about the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and stuff would be less likely to make them believe their religion. So they never did.
Well, there you go.
So I never grew up believing in Santa Claus or Easter Bunny or Tooth Fairy or anything. Like, I always knew it was my parents. So, but yeah, I had friends that believed in that stuff and I wasn't allowed to tell them, you know. I don't think any of them were quite to the point where if you'd have showed them a cartoon, they would have been like, so Santa's evil now? Like, it just, I don't think is in the brain of a kid. So.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about like, it's not about what a kid's going to do. It is about what is going to make Karen make a phone call.
Yeah. Dang you, Karen.
Yep.
Okay. I don't think there's too much to say about the plot of this one because this one is very much setting up. This is what this character is. It's mostly just like, you know, here's Pith Possum. He's got a lair. He sort of works for the city. Here's Commissioner Stress, I think is his name.
Yeah.
That he works for. Here's his sidekick. Here's his girlfriend. Here's his, you know, secret identity.
The girlfriend, the only human in this world.
Yes.
Despite her name being Deer.
Yeah, that was weird to me. I was like, how is she, what, huh? But again, I guess, don't cartoons. Think about it.
I mean, I think the answer is the male gaze, but it's interesting that her name is Doris Deer and she's not a deer.
Yes.
It was very Jessica Rabbit to me. That's immediately what I thought of. I was like, this is them trying to do like a version of Jessica Rabbit, isn't it?
You know, quite possibly.
Yeah. Although I like Doris's design. Similar style. Yeah, she's drawn in a very similar but slightly less exaggeratedly sexy style.
And yeah, I don't know if it's a Lynn Naylor girl, but it's certainly somebody doing an impression of a Lynn Naylor girl.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I thought it was an interesting setup, but as a plot on its own, there wasn't a lot here for me.
I did like the Easter Bunny having the little mutant egg as henchmen.
Yeah, that was a good touch. And the egg-shaped, like, ship or whatever.
Yeah.
So I like that one.
Realistic looking gun for a kid's cartoon. You really didn't see that.
Yeah, actually, and not a choice they would make again in this series. They usually like to have wacky looking weapons after this.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times, yeah, even in the 90s, you would have to go like really sci-fi looking with it. Which is what they did on Gargoyles a lot. Mm-hmm. That they had like very sci-fi looking guns. You could never mistake it for anything that was like in Daddy's closet, you know? Or they would go with something really
goofy,
wacky. Or in the case of Batman the Animated Series, they'd go like 40s throwbacks, like Tommy guns and stuff that just didn't really exist anymore.
That a kid's not going to find in a closet somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point that I hadn't thought about, but yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite gag in this has to be when the girlfriend is like, Pith Possum will come for me, and he's like, oh darn, Pith Possum, and he drops her, and Pith catches her, and then just tosses her to his sidekick. He's just such a, like, she spent the whole time being like, yes, he's totally in love with me. He will come for me. And then the second she's in his arms, he's like, you hold this.
And you know, we had just seen Pith and his alter ego kind of fawning over her with the hearts on. It's like, so, you know, obviously there's a feeling thing going on, but he's like, yep, duty first, I guess.
Yeah.
Also, I think that's the only time in the entire series we get to see Obadiah's light bulb work.
Oh, yeah. That is true. So, what's the next in the Pith Possum?
All right, Pith Possum, the second episode we got, Son of the Cursed Black of Darkness. I have to read it like this, because that's the only way these things make sense.
No, it's just like, it's also that I will never know what episode it is by the title.
Yeah, me neither. I was like, wow, these titles are not helpful at all. It's like the early Family Guy titles where it's like, Death Has a Holiday, or like whatever, like no.
So
Bill was definitely not thinking about having to refer to these cartoons later.
Yeah.
So let's go to the plot. A new superhero, Super Water Buffalo, organizes crime for himself to stomp out Pith Possum as Possum City's hero, forcing the former hero to get a new job. And a more successful job by the cartoon logic.
Yeah, I love that, like, Pith Possum is out of a job, and the first thing he does is like, well, let's panhandle. And then he's like, job wanted must pay $40,000 a day. I'm like, how much was this city's budget for crime fighting?
There's a lot of bits of business I love in this episode.
Yeah.
Like Pith and Obadiah getting chewed out by, like, every voice actor who was on that episode doing their best Jewish old fogey voice.
Yeah, that is a good thing. You're like, Pith, where were you?
Somebody
else stole our money. Yeah. But I love the introduction of Super Water Buffalo as he saves the girlfriend.
Dorothea.
Yeah, that she's walking down the street at night, and
it definitely feels like the opening to the first Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, a bit, in that same kind of trope of like, oh no, the damsel is in danger, and you know, all that kind of stuff. But
it's kind of interesting how they like just play it straight for a moment before introducing Super Water Buffalo.
Yeah.
And I love that everybody in this episode has to say, like, Super Water Buffalo.
With the W on their head.
Or Water Buffalo.
Yeah. Do the little horns on their head for the thing. I love it. So good. That was the thing, I think, that made me laugh most in this episode. That and Pith being absolutely certain that his lemonade was going to get him $40,000 a day. Because he opens up a lemonade stand, which he does not open.
I can't. First, he tries to sell possum squeezins.
Yeah. That was a good line, too. You know, living in the South, I am absolutely certain that there could be a product called possum squeezins and people down here would buy it. I love that he basically immediately franchises a lemonade stand.
And it works. I mean, they're pretty much making more money with the lemonade stand than they did at superheroing.
Yeah.
I love that smash cut to the beautiful, like, carved in wood logo of their lemonade, you know, empire.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tree that just has the giant sign carved into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I like that he only goes back to superheroing when Super Water Buffalo finally outs himself as a criminal and robs the entire town at once at like a giant parade in his honor or whatever.
Yeah.
Super Water Buffalo, again, Brad Garrett doing a wonderful, you know. I mean, I kind of joked about Patrick Warburton before, but this is very much like the closest he gets to Warburton.
Yeah, he's kind of doing like a deadpan Sinatra.
Yeah. Yeah. But this
Joe
Piscopo
Sinatra, yeah.
Yeah. This, though, feels like a character that if Brad Garrett wasn't playing it, they would have called Warburton.
Yeah.
Like, it's that same feel
right,
in the way the jokes are delivered. Yeah, I know, but it's now that's what you think of. At least that's what I think of, because, you know.
Yeah.
I have a giant picture of Brock Sampson on my wall, so like I'm gonna think of Warburton. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alright. Is that all we can say about this one?
Yeah, it's a good solid episode, and I like the lemonade jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably technically the most solid of the Pith Possum episodes. Like, you know, I love all of the Pith Possum episodes because of the things that I value. But as far as like a complete story, like that, you know, is kind of using its, you know, the characters are moving it along and it's not, you know, necessarily just like a series of the gags Bill felt like doing today. I feel like this is the one.
Yeah, it's a good one and a good plot. I would recommend it.
All right. So moving on to the next episode, Bride of Darkness.
Okay, I actually do know which one this is.
We have a new villain, also Brad Garrett as
Brad Garrett,
Shirley Pimple, who using an army of giant termites to destroy Possum City because they hate bugs. And you know, Possum City is an entire forest. That's a city. It's all made of wood. So termites, why not?
Now, the reason I picked this one, other than you know, Brad Garrett as Shirley Temple is amazing. is like the sequence in which Pith and Obadiah go to see Stress and Tension at their office, but everything has been eaten by the termites, so it's just a pile of sawdust. And I feel like they milk this gag for everything it has worked to a degree that like I'm surprised somebody didn't step in and stop, and I'm glad they didn't, because yes, it's just like all this like very slow, all the sound, but the sound effects go away, shots of Pip and Obadiah walking through the sawdust.
Yeah, I liked how extended that gag was. Some of my favorite, like, Simpsons gags are when the gag goes on just a little too long and you're like, okay, this isn't funny anymore. And then it goes on like 1 second longer and you're like, nope, I was wrong. It's hilarious again.
Yeah, it goes from funny to not funny and then turn right back around to funny.
It's a phenomenon that I know as Kristen Schaal as a horse. and also then like stress and tension are referring to things that aren't there because it's nothing but a pile of sawdust.
Yep.
I love that Pith gets there and he's like, I love what you've done with the place. Very nice. It's just a giant pile of sawdust. And then he's like, we didn't do it to the place. And then he's like, well, bravo to whoever did. No, that's the problem. I like that basically the building that Pith's hideout is in is like the only one that hasn't been hit by the termites yet.
it's mostly that sequence that made me want to show you guys this episode in particular.
Yeah, it's a good one. But I also like the little bit of Pith's character that we get at the end, which is... I'm of two minds about this because the ending of this episode comes so quick and without much buildup. There's like one line early on where he's like, you know, hey, have you ever, I actually really like bugs. And then they're like, no, you don't. And then at the end he wins because he actually knew the spider that she's using to kill him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes.
And, like, it turns out that when the spider was just a baby, he saved the spider from getting squished by a little kid, and the spider's like, oh yeah, hey, I remember you, you know, we're fine. And then Pith is like...
Was this just Harnell Wayne Newton?
This one might have been the Wayne Newton, yeah.
Yeah, I'm especially fond of this spider. It's... you know, there's an artist who is seen throughout this entire series named Eddie Fitzgerald, and, you know, his style is felt all throughout, you know, the show in particular, but this is, like, that spider is, like, the most Eddie Fitzgerald thing in the world, and I absolutely love the way it looks, and, like, the faces they're making at each other.
I love the workaround to the spider shooting the venom out of the armpit, as opposed to the thorax.
Yeah, that's a good one. I was like, that's... Interesting. Yes.
But... We don't need spiders shooting webbing out of their butts on kids' television. Can't have that.
Yeah.
And the other spider hero's on the other network. We don't own him yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a way with addressing notes that I find, mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah. That's too disgusting to have it out of their butt. Oh, yeah? Well, what about their armpit? He just does armpit parts and webbing comes out. Yeah. That's not something kids are going to mimic.
Well, at least no one will be harmed by mimicking it.
Yeah. I do like the ending to this with the spider because I like that it broadens Pith as a character, that he's a hero even when in moments when nobody's gonna notice.
Yeah.
Like you have a feeling that he was just, you know, on his way home or something from a much more interesting job. And was like, hey, kid, don't squash that spider. And then just kept walking.
Yep.
You know, that it was that, like, tiny little moment of kindness that, like, ended up saving his life later, which I think is actually strangely a perfect role model for kids. I know that's not the point of this particular cartoon, is to give any kind of, you know, moral of a story to kids. But I think that's actually a pretty good moral.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, so I like that just because of what it says about Pitt's character, which I don't really think we really get to see in any of the episodes, any of the other episodes you sent. So yeah.
Okay, I think that's all we can say about that one.
Yep.
Let's move on to The Darkness is Dark. Dr. Paul Bunyan kidnaps Obadiah. And Pith Possum is unable to rescue him because Obadiah is the only one who knows all of Pith, how Pith's gadgets work.
Yeah. Pith is unable to leave the lair because he cannot figure out how to open the door.
Professor Paul Bunyan is like the most is the villain that recurs the most in this, and I think he's a really funny character. So I wanted to pick one that to represent him, and just seeing how useless Pith is without Obadiah is hilarious.
Yeah, and honestly, you already in the ones we've already talked about, I really didn't mention it because I was saving it for this episode, but you really already get a little bit of a feel of that he kind of stumbles into things, and Obadiah is the one that kind of knows what's going on a little bit more. But this one really just drives it home. In case you missed the subtlety, folks, we're going to write a whole episode where it is the entire plot.
But the sidekick is the real hero, and the one everyone thinks is a hero, he's just the eye candy.
Yeah.
It's really fun to hear Jeff Bennett as, as Pith, as he completely snaps. I don't know how any of this works!
Yeah. I love that one of their security things is just a tiger. That it's just like a cage drops around you and then a tiger drops into the cage and mauls you. And that's their security system.
I bet you I know where you got it.
Eh? Yeah. Disney doesn't own that show yet either. No, but I love that, in a world full of anthropomorphic animals, that they're Jim, come work for us in our secret lair. You just sit in a chair, and in case anything happens, a buzzer will go off, we'll drop a cage on a dude, you jump into the cage, and you mess him up.
You get to mob somebody.
It's a Pluto goofy situation. You just don't see a whole lot of Plutos in this show otherwise.
Yeah. I like that explanation less. I'm going to go with mine.
Fine.
No, but I thought that was one of the funniest gags. And I love that the only reason that he gets out of the tower at all is that he ends up tripping a security system, which is it shoves you in a cannon and blasts you out the window.
Yeah.
Which leads to my second favorite gag, which is that Pith is sailing through the air and he's like, well, I'm finally out now, but he's so far up in the air and he's like, I know Obadiah packed a parachute somewhere in this. And he finds a button and he hits it and a full-size grand piano comes popping out and it just plummets him to the ground.
In case you need that.
In case you need to have a concert in the middle of your superheroing.
Attached to you by strings to your back as if it were a parachute.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's actually attached to him by parachute strings, but a piano. And you just gotta wonder, what situation was Obadiah planning for? Oh.
Oh, it was a concert I was planning for your birthday.
Yeah, exactly. But I love that, of course, in the way cartoons work, that the piano ends up hitting the head of one of the bad guys and then falling into the bad guy's lair. We haven't talked about what Bunyan's plan is in this one, and I love his nefarious evil plan.
Yep, he's gonna drain all the trees of their sap to put it on his pancakes.
Yes, his giant pancakes.
It's just a plot to get syrup for his pancakes, which, okay. I've been in desperate need of syrup before, so yeah. I don't really know what else to say about that. It's just such a great gag.
I'm trying to remember which episode this is. It might have been this one. Is this the one where Obadiah makes the very long speech at the beginning where he keeps getting in the completely insane poses?
Yes.
No.
Well, it's one of them. He's like, at one point he's been in a Roman gladiator outfit.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that is also one of my favorite bits. This is another one of my favorite bits in the entire show is that speech. I have every pose screen capped.
Yeah, that is awesome. The I don't know. I just everything about this episode, the complete uselessness of the hero, the weird security gadgets that are rigged up, you know, Pith absolutely losing his mind, and some of the reads on those lines are just hilarious, like you said. And just the crazy, you know, why is the supervillain doing all this? Because he wants breakfast. It's like, it's just really good.
And I was like, hey, shouldn't we take him to jail? First, pancakes.
Yeah. Well, now we're too large to get through the door. So speaking of food-based supervillains, I think we got one left, don't we?
We do. Dark of the Darker Darkness. So Pith Possum gets amnesia after an accident with his latest invention. Meanwhile, villain Supper Squirrel robs Possum City of all its food. Why is Maurice LaMarche not voicing Supper Squirrel?
Yeah. That was...
because he was busy doing that on another network.
Yeah.
That's all I think. I was like, all right, you know, so I get the voice, but you know, I think this really should have been Maurice LaMarche.
Yeah. It's Jim Cummings doing his best, Maurice LaMarche doing his best Orson Welles.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the thing about Pith Possum is that it seemed like they really wanted to have a specific cast that they used in every episode and not stray from that.
Yeah.
Like, there might be, I think there's one where Bill might do the voice of an announcer penguin, but other than that, it seems to always be the same group of, guys.
Yeah. Which I can respect. I mean, it's not that he does a bad job with it, it's just, but I had the exact same thought Tuesday did. I'm like, this really is Maurice LaMarche's, like, official thing. Like, like, this is literally listed on his resume. But I think I like Supper Squirrel the best of any of the villains we saw, because it's just such a hilarious idea for a villain. Like, I'm just going to eat all your food.
Yep.
That's it. I'm going to rob you at gunpoint of your food.
Yeah, it suits this episode well, because I feel like they needed something really, really basic and easy to understand against, you know, whatever weird stuff Pith is doing while he's going through his different personalities.
Yeah, I love that they are working on the Cranium Crasher Mariachi canon at the beginning of the episode. I don't know exactly when you would need a canon that would make you hear mariachi music when you're hit by it. But okay, this much like the piano is like, I'm wondering what situation they thought they were going to be in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to ask Obadiah, and nobody's asking Obadiah.
No.
Yeah. But Pith gets hit by this new canon, and after he hears the mariachi music, he starts believing he's other people.
Yeah.
First is a dancer, and then he's a stand-up comedian. I think there's a third one in there.
There is. It's probably my favorite sequence in any Pith Possum cartoon. It's the one where he thinks he's Frank Sinatra for about a minute.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. But I actually love Pith going into a seedy nightclub in Possum City.
Yes.
I love that Possum City has seedy nightclubs.
Well, of course, yeah.
And Pith is the worst stand-up comedian ever.
Oh, which I found hilarious. It's Pith bombing on stage.
Forgetting his jokes, delivering the wrong punchline.
Yeah. I love that we come into, like, the only punchline apparently he could remember. And it's like, and then one fly says to the other one, I know, but it sure tastes like it. And I thought that was the greatest punchline without a setup ever.
And they'll likely never be able to say that setup.
Yeah. I thought that was great. I was like, that's a good getting one past the censors bit right there.
And the video that you sent us, the one on YouTube, has a little logo of a station here in Chicago, WPWR, which actually aired the Disney Afternoon back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like the sources for all the episodes that are out there seem to either be like the UHF stations when they first aired or Toon Disney airings. And I always, it's like the Toon Disney airings of these shows are, you know, understandably much clearer, but they usually have the giant frigging logo in the corner, and sometimes like the screen shrinks for them to like put some intrusive advertising in.
Yep.
Yeah. That was an unfortunate thing back in the day that the Disney Channel used to do.
Yep. Because they wanted kids to go to their website and play their games, and parents get some more money out of them, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, the Toon Disney ones actually used to cut a few gags for content every now and then. And so, you know, I'm kind of hoping that, like, eventually these will show up on Disney Plus and will just be, you know, nice, clear versions that don't have cuts in them.
I don't know. I mean, we've already had a few reports of edits in some of the more recent movies.
Yeah, that is a thing they have been doing. But the thing is that, you know, I didn't really notice. Granted, they can make a case out of the weirdest things, as we've already mentioned, but I didn't really notice anything in any of these that I was like, ooh, that kind of violates the Disney Plus, you know, aesthetic they've got going.
Well, I mean, like, I don't want to, I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit. A couple nights ago, I decided to watch all of the Tex 10 Stars in order. Mm-hmm. And there was a shot where, Rongo, the lead villain, threatens the narrator, and he does so by like flipping his pistol into the shot. And it was a Toon Disney airing, and I saw that got cut. Like, I know these cartoons like very, very well at this point, and so like I recognize that shot was gone.
Yeah, I could see that one. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that being removed by Disney Plus, but yeah. I still think there's enough salvageable that they should put it up.
I think
so too. Like, or at the very least, you know, Bill's a DVD thing isn't, release.
Bill's thing isn't crossing the line. He just really likes to toe it.
Yeah. I like to walk right up to it and dance. but yeah, I think this was probably my favorite of the Pith Possum episodes, just because I love how ridiculous everything in this was. Like, none of this should have been in the same episode. Like, every bit of this seems like it comes from a different, much more elaborate episode. So it's like, I don't know, it's like a Pith Possum smoothie or something. I don't know, it's very, very strange, but I like it.
Yeah, I definitely like the Pith Possum shorts. There's something here that they could expand upon. If it wasn't more of a I hate superheroes, so I'm going to make fun of them. If it was more of a general superhero parody with love, this might have lasted a bit longer. I think this probably could have got his own spinoff.
You know, I'm going to disagree with that. I do like the Pith Possum stuff. Like, I got nothing against it. But to me, this felt like a, you know, a Minerva Minx short or something from Animaniacs. It's like,
I can say that.
You know, it's good in a few minute segments. It's good as a short, but I'm not sure I would sit down and watch it for a full 30 minutes.
I mean, okay, Schnookums and Meat, I would. The thing is, I think Possum City is maybe more interesting than Pith himself is. One thing that they were talking about doing for the next season is, you know, those two characters that were like holding up Doris Deer in the Super Water Buffalo episode?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were thinking about a spinoff with those two guys.
Okay, I could see. I mean, they were interesting characters for the time they were on, so I mean, I'd be willing to allow them to show me more to make up my mind. Like,
they have a bit part in another episode as well, where they're also, you know, also unconvincing villains. But I think just like they, you know, seeing more time with like other characters in Possum City, I think may have been an interesting time. Like, I feel like they could have done like a Possum City series where there were three segments that all took place there, but it was all completely different setups.
Yeah, I see that. Maybe one of them being maybe not Pith Possum every episode, like maybe one every two or three episodes. You can do one then, other characters in Possum City.
Yeah, I could see that the world building is perhaps more interesting than the central character himself. But yeah, Pith Possum, I also give that a thumbs up. It's fun, you know, go. I mean, my personal opinion, of course, but yeah, I would suggest it to people.
Yeah, I would. So let's get to the third segment of your Average Schnookums and Meat cartoon. Tex Tinstar, the best in the West. You know, he's the sheriff.
The only one that revolves around humans.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the only one that's serialized.
Yeah. So about that, the thing about Tex Tinstar that makes it really difficult to like send you guys individual episodes of is that it is, you know, we have 4 minutes left in the show. We're going to tell this bizarre continuing story that we are clearly making up as we go along. And, like, trying to have a cliffhanger at the end of every episode, no matter how little sense that makes. And it's just going to be, like, it's going to be, like, almost a writer's exercise of, like, can we start here and have some sort of ending by the time we get to the 13th cartoon in these four-minute segments? And so just, like, trying to send you guys four that take place in different parts of the story is weird, but I also didn't want to just, like, send you guys the first four.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely felt kind of disconnected, but I did kind of figure that's what was going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My other theory was that every episode had a cliffhanger that was never resolved, which I thought was a hilarious bit. I was like, if that's what they're going for, I am down for that, because that is a hilarious idea.
And yeah, it's something Bill would do, but it doesn't happen to be what they did. It's just like, the idea was, let me put myself in an impossible situation, let me deliberately write myself into a corner, and then have to resolve it next week.
Yeah. No, I mean, that would be interesting to go back and kind of watch them in order and see how they did that. But I really kind of got into the idea of like, oh, there's just an absurd ending every week. And then every week it just starts somewhere else for a different story, which I think would be a hilarious idea for a supposed, you know, continuing story.
Reminds me a little bit of how they would like die at the end of every episode of Get a Life.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I do remember that, and that was a gag I liked. So, yeah, very similar vein.
Or like Aeon Flux, where she would just die in it at the end of every episode.
Yeah. I love things like that, where it's just like, we don't care if it makes sense to you. It made us laugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these are like 4-minute cartoons, so let's try to get through these. We're not going to have a lot to say about them, because there's 4 minutes. So
and in addition, like, it's a little hard to talk about without, like, the rest of the story, but, yeah.
All right, so the first one we were sent was A Fistful of Food Stamps. Rongo, which we had not mentioned, who is voiced by Brad Garrett. He escapes from prison, rejoins his gang, the Wrong Riders, and tries to get revenge on Tex Tinstar. That's kind of it. But, so, that's... And, yeah, it ends on a cliffhanger, so let's talk just about... Generally, I do like how he kind of started off with your typical 50s cowboy trying to sing a song, you know, and then he goes, well, but that's boring. Let's talk about this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that joke I really liked, you know, because it's like, yeah, we're gonna have a singing cowboy like everybody does. And then it's like, nope.
I love the sound effect that plays when the singing cowboy is playing his guitar, because that's not music. That's definitely a sound that action he's making would do, but that ain't music.
Yeah. I love that all the strings keep, like, snapping and curling up from the guitar. So, yeah, I said earlier this is Johnny Bravo as a cowboy, and to me this is just Johnny Bravo as a cowboy. I'm sorry, I can't see it as anything else. I know it came earlier. I know it isn't Johnny Bravo as a cowboy, but yeah.
Well, there's no womanizing to speak of in it.
Well, yeah, that's true. I appreciate that.
I do like the point that Tex asks the other people in the town to help him get rid of the Wrong Riders, and every single one of them just get the hell out of the city. I think we're not going to deal with that. No, this is your job. We're not going to deal with them. We're out of here. We're leaving. We're moving. The only one in town that besides the sheriff and the deputy is the Undertaker.
Yes.
Which you expect that the Undertaker would just be there, like, yeah, someone's gonna die. I have work.
Yeah. We've mentioned it before. I am not the biggest of Western fans. That was like my dad's genre, and every time he put it on, I was kind of like, oh, this again. I only like Westerns if you also put spaceships in them.
Or time travel.
Or time travel. I can do a little bit of time travel, yeah. But this is very much, it feels like a Rocky and Bullwinkle throwback to me.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Which I do like. I'm a huge Rocky and Bullwinkle fan. So this did have a very familiar kind of warm fuzzy for me.
Tune in next time for...
Yeah, it was very much that.
Yeah, I love how overzealous the announcer is in Texan Star.
Yeah, just an overzealous Western accent narrator.
Like I don't know if this line is in one of the episodes I showed you guys, but there's this one part where he yells, "Godfrey Daniels, what's all this, kids?"
Yeah, I don't remember that, but that is pretty funny. Yeah, this very much felt like Dudley Do Right, but in the American West.
Yeah,
kind of as well.
That actually makes more sense to me now,
and with more money thrown at it.
Yeah,
yeah, that too. But a lot of the same kind of setups and ideas in that, like playing with a lot of the same tropes. Mm-hmm. Which I do respect, you know, as a thing. And I love the kind of, I think it's the first episode where the guy puts him in the, like, Rube Goldberg machine.
Yeah,
yeah. And he's like, well, first I'm going to cut this rope, and then this rope is going to take you over this pit of sharks, and then it's going to move you on to, you know, whatever else a weird thing that happens.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a hilarious bit, just because it's playing with the old, you know, monologuing trope.
Yep. Monologuing and leaving.
Yeah. Which I like, but I just love the, like, how absurd can we get this absurd Rube Goldberg machine? Which I liked, that he's, like, strapped in a giant bundle of dynamite, and then he's gonna be, like, dangled over a bunch of things that it won't kill you, but and then eventually this will light the dynamite that you're attached to. I like that. I like crazy Rube Goldberg nonsense and overly elaborate traps.
Well, this is the segment for you.
Yeah, it was very much the segment for me. So let's talk about the second one.
Low Pants Drifter. Yeah, we're in the middle of a story here. Our heroes and another character that doesn't talk, they are trying to prevent themselves from falling over a cliff. And this is where we meet Floyd the Rattlesnake.
Yeah, another kind of Jerry Lewis impersonation from Jess here. But I actually liked the Floyd the Insane Rattlesnake, because I love how many different names Tex comes up with for Floyd. It's like Floyd the Plum Crazy Rattlesnake.
Plum Local Rattlesnake, yeah.
Yeah, Bunker's Local Rattlesnake. He comes up with like every other term for insane that he can think of. which is another running gag that I kind of approve of. I have officially approved your gag, Mr. Cop. There you go.
Yay.
You've waited your entire career for that endorsement.
I do like how they use the other guy kind of as a weight, because we need to, you know, we need to stop this from happening. So we'll just send this nerdy guy and have him be our anchor.
Percy Lace Daisy, the bank owner, is basically a cartoon prop throughout the entire thing. He has two lines the entire series.
Yeah, I love that they, like, use him as an anchor and throw him into a cactus. And then I love, as they're dangling over the cliff, he's like, well, I'm glad he was here, sidekick, because if not, we would have had to throw you overboard.
Yeah, like, the first line... And, you know, one of the only lines he has is, you know, they're getting him out of a stagecoach. He, like, he was apparently riding along with a girl who he, like, holds out and says,
you can have the girl, just leave me alone.
Yeah.
She punches him out and just exits the entire series and you never see her again. And then that is enough
for
Percy, that is enough for Percy Lace Daisy to endure constant torture throughout the entire rest of Text Instar.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But I do love the what's the sidekick's name?
Chafe.
Chafe. I do love that he like turns and he's like, well, Chafe, I'm glad that guy was here all because I had to rise out, I had to throw you off. And he was like,
I think
you're yeah, right. I thought you were gonna say that. Like, I love that it's such a sidekick thing to say of just like, yeah, I realize that's my role in life. That's what I mean to you. I know it. I really liked this episode. I mean, I liked the Floyd coming in, you know, there's a couple of good gags with Floyd, but I really think that first scene where they're like trying to prevent the coach from falling off the cliff is really like the gag I liked most in this one.
You get to see this sports play.
Yeah. We haven't talked about my favorite character from Text 10 Star yet.
Go ahead.
The horse.
Oh,
Hereboy.
Hereboy, yeah. Hereboy. I absolutely love his horse. And I love the way that the narrator's like, meanwhile, Tex and Chafe and Hereboy.
Yeah, every time.
Every time he has to go, Hereboy.
It's never Hereboy, it's always Hereboy.
Yeah. And I like that gag too. I'm a big fan of a running gag. I don't care how ridiculous it is. If you repeat it in every episode, I will find that the most hilarious thing in the world for some reason. I'm such an easy mark for that, and I don't know why.
Well, I'm a big fan of it, too, as you know, because I do it all the time.
Yeah. I love inside jokes and running gags. And if it's an inside joke that's also a running gag, even better.
True.
I think inside jokes and running gags both opened for Scooter Picnic, didn't they?
I think one of them was a now offensive reference in a Darkwing Duck episode.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, let's talk about the next text and story.
Saddle sores, sagebrush, and seaweed. Escaping from the undersea traps with sharks, Tex chases after the character's name is Krusty Rustknuckle, who's escaped with Safe and Texas Horse.
Yeah, I felt so bad for this one because this is the one where we didn't get Hereboy.
I needed you guys to meet Little Girl's Horse.
That's a girl's horse.
This is a horse for a little girl.
And what's
and so, I do what's, like go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just the thing I love about the joke is that you would think just hearing the joke out of context, like, oh, that's a toxic masculinity joke. They're making fun of things for girls. But they're really not in the way it comes off.
It really is a small horse that's pink.
Yeah, and it's literally size for a little girl. It's like a tiny little pony. Which is, because you think it's going to be like, well, I can't ride that. That's a girl's bike. And all it is like a bike with, you know, a lower bar in the middle. And it might be painted pink. Like, it doesn't matter. It's functionally the same. But no, this is like a miniature tiny little horse.
That, do you see literally him? It might be a different episode. Do you see him take care of the horse, the little girl's horse in this episode?
No.
Yeah,
no.
The next step in the episode that follows, you see him have to, like... You're going back and forth between I think it's Chafe taking care of Goat, and then in contrast, you see Tex have to take care of little girl's horse in like a tiny way. It's like removing the saddle with tweezers, feeding it with an eyedropper, brushing it with a toothbrush, tying it to a daisy.
We also didn't mention that Chafe rides a goat, which I love, and I see where you got it from. Yep.
One of my favorite parts of this is half this episode is a commercial for a product that doesn't exist.
Right.
That's yes.
Included this because that commercial is so freaking funny.
Even with the bad acting makes this commercial.
Yeah. What is this thing, Chafe?
So tell us about the product they're selling here so we can get the product.
Trout sickles.
Yes. I love the idea of trout sickles. I mean, as a concept, I would not eat it. Like, I will eat a lot of, like, weird foods and candies.
Not even with the crisp cookie crunch?
And the chocolate center?
Yes, because what you want after the fishy flavor is a chocolate center.
Yeah, a fishy flavor and aroma. Yum.
Aroma?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, just, like, wait a minute. Husband wrote of... the
yeah, character. Really. What it means is just like, okay, Bill's just going to do whatever he wants here. But yeah, then just like the weirdest drawing of Tex ever as he's standing on two horses. This cooled my tough Texas temperature.
Yeah, if you're going to make another comparison to Ren and Stimpy here, this is absolutely just when Ren and Stimpy would go into the weird cartoon moment. I mean, the weird commercial moment.
Yeah.
You know, log and don't whiz on the electric fence and all those classics. But, this, I feel, is hilarious in much that same way.
And like, another thing about it, it's like, these are already only 4-minute cartoons.
And we're going to waste half of story. That.
Yeah, and this one's just like, oh, we have extra time. Let's put in a commercial for frozen fish on a stick.
Yeah. I really respected that as a thing. I love when... usually in comedy, it doesn't happen as often in drama, but I just love where it's like, yeah, I know we have story to get to, but this is my show, darn it, and I am going to stop just to do something that I find absolutely hilarious.
As a former showrunner yourself, Kyle.
Well, I was kind of in a very similar situation, when we were doing the first Magiswords 2-parter, and we suddenly have that, ad for Ralphio's because we, for the first time ever, we were running short. Like, oh, I actually paced this episode the way I wanted to. I used up the whole board. We have time for an ad-libbed commercial.
I don't think I've ever run short on anything in my life, as you can probably tell listening to this show. Yeah. My master's thesis was almost 80 pages, and I still was writing, and eventually my thesis director looked at me and went, no, that's enough. And the funny thing is, my thesis director, I chose him because he looks like Maurice LaMarche. I'm not kidding. I once showed him a picture of Maurice LaMarche, and he was like, holy crap, that is my brother. Wow. I need to ask my parents if there is another, he looks exactly like Maurice LaMarche. Doesn't sound anything like him, but he looks so much like Maurice LaMarche. That's
funny.
So yeah, I picked him basically because of that. I was like, if I have to like sit in a room with somebody, it's going to be somebody that,
look at Mo. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to look at Mo. And, also I told him, because he was kind of hated in the department. I was like, you know, he's like, no, you don't want me. Everybody hates me. And I'm like, no, dude, you look like Maurice LaMarche. And he thought that was so funny. I was like, he gets my sense of humor. He will understand my thesis. And it turned out very well. But yeah.
I could never hate you. You look like a voice actor.
Yes, exactly. And the fact that he was like, one, you are correct. I look exactly like this voice actor, and it's creepy. And two, that is the funniest thing I've ever heard. I also am a person who, he was like really into voice actors and cartoons, and I didn't know it until that moment. So I was, we got along beautifully. He's a wonderful man. okay, text 10 star. Back to 10. What's the,
we the got final one more episode. Yeah. The final one that we got to review here is The Vinyl Frontier. Tex finally catches up to the Wrong Riders as an asteroid head towards Earth.
Yeah, this is the one where they destroy the planet outright.
Yeah.
And this is another one of, like, I guess this is him going, you don't need an explanation for this. Because we get the funniest thing of, like, you know, elsewhere, a scientist accidentally screws up and blows up the planet he was trying to save, and part of that planet, an asteroid, comes to Earth. Which is the greatest explanation for anything, I think, ever. It's just that there's some, like, Kryptonian sort of planet somewhere. And some scientist is like, I know what'll save the planet. Boom.
Yeah, I chose this episode. So this is the one where, like, they're doing terrible things to Lace Daisy while we wait for the asteroid to fall, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, this is one where it's just, like, so visually over the top. Like, I don't know what circumstances led to this. Like, this is the one where, like, Lace Daisy's running around with a beehive stuck to his head, and, like, Rongo's laughing so hard that, is like, the top of his head detaches from the bottom part of his head.
So he's Canadian.
Right.
Yeah, I love that it uses the gag, which is another one of my, like, why doesn't this gag get used more often? Because it's one of my favorites, which is like the, oh really, you're gonna do something horrible to that guy? Show me.
Yeah, that's definitely something out of a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
You wouldn't.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what would you do to him? Well, I might do something like grab him and whack him into the ground a bunch of times or something. I just love the escalation of that. Of
I want a good clean fight. None of this, none of that, and none of these.
Yep.
Yeah, I love Tex kind of playing dumb with the, like, oh no, but what would that look like if you were to do that to him? Please demonstrate using this man as a prop. And it's just one of those things where, like, you trick the villain into damaging something either they care about or you also hate, as the case may be. And I just, again, it's another gag that I love that I feel just doesn't get used to its full potential often.
And since you told us about that one episode, we didn't see how this character's kind of a sleazeball. Yeah, he kind of deserves all the stuff that's happening to him.
Yep. But, like, it's... he's paying for that one line in for the entire series.
But, you know, the entire series is only, like, 20 minutes after that happens. So yeah. I think it's pretty fair. I really loved everything about the way that this episode built. I loved the visual gags, and I really loved the ending with the asteroid, where the asteroid came from, that it drills all the way through Earth and then pops out the bottom like a balloon, leaving Earth to kind of deflate or whatever in the background.
Yeah, like, I could not believe my eyes when I watched this entire episode for the first time when I was a teenager, and I'm like, oh, this is not what I was expecting in my Western cartoon today.
Yeah, you really don't expect the entire Earth to be destroyed by an asteroid in your Western cartoon.
Now, but, it's a space cartoon!
In Westerns in general, like, you know, you have a fairly narrow view of the universe as you are in the West. And so, thinking about the world as a whole, it's not a thing you're normally asked to do in a Western.
Yeah, it's a very small scope, the Western. I like that at the end they are clinging to the asteroid, and that is the setup for the next episode.
Yeah.
Like, how are they going to get off this asteroid?
Yeah, it's kind of the ultimate quarter paint, this one.
Yeah. But I really did. I think this was easily my favorite of the Tex cartoons taken as a on their own. Maybe in the context of other ones, I might find another one more impactful. But just kind of watching them out of order, this was just funny to me as its own independent episode.
Yep.
Yeah, I feel similarly.
So overall, thoughts on Tex 10 Star? I think I would love to see this as a full 8-minute short. Maybe taking the serialized elements out of it. I know that's probably why you guys like it, but it's like, I could have had a full adventure in the 8 minutes and not have it, you know, to be continued. This could be continued, could be, you know, and so on and so forth. But that's just me.
It kind of could exist in a lot of ways, but I, you know, I don't know quite another show that is this much. We're clearly making this up as we go along. Like the closest we get, you know, to a continuing story like that is indeed a Bullwinkle and Rocky episode.
Yeah.
But it that isn't like this completely.
Yeah.
By the time the next part is, you know, that's the conclusion of the adventure, then we're on to the next one.
Yeah. I'm going to disagree in that I think this is exactly the right format, and I do not want any more of this at one sitting. I don't know if it's just my general feelings on Westerns or because I like the kind of weird serialized, how are they going to get out of this one kind of feel to it. But I think about 4 minutes of this at a given shot is probably all I could stand. Probably because it mixes two things that I'm not super fond of, which is weird Elvis impersonations and Westerns. Like, I am not at all a fan of Elvis or impersonations of him. And I am, the Western is like one of my least favorite genres of anything. So for me, while there are a lot of good gags in there that I can kind of look around those two things, I don't think I could stand this for more than about 4 minutes at a time. Mm. Even kind of binging the four shorts we watched in a row was a bit taxing for me. I was like, this is starting to grate on my nerves.
So, you know, I will say, you know, I did enjoy watching all of them together a few nights ago, but I think like seeing them as they aired weekly, not 100% remembering what the hell happened last week, is kind of the best way to enjoy this show.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just for me, this is by far my least favorite sketch of the three. But, man, Schnookums and Meat, just overall in the whole show, the actual Schnookums and Meat segments are just some absolute gold.
Yeah, definitely agree. Mm-hmm. Of the three, Schnookums and Meat is definitely my favorite of the three segments.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to nail down a favorite of the three just because, like, I like individual cartoons from each of the three segments, you know, on their own so much. It's, you know, asking me to choose a favorite baby. So just overall, the Schnookums and Meat Funny Cartoon Show is my favorite TV cartoon.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fair. Like, I can totally see why, especially young Kyle would have been like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I am a little sad I missed this as a kid.
Mm. Yeah. This came out like a year before Gargoyles did.
Yeah.
And it was 95.
Oh, did it? Like, I think it might have been like, I might be thinking of it as the same year because, like, I think one started at the beginning of, like, a TV season and then the other caught on later.
This was only 13 episodes, so, you know, the first half of the year probably.
Yeah, and so I think it was, you know, Gargoyles ran its course and then they started showing Schnookums and Meat to, you know, pick up the other half because it, you know, cut into whichever show it was. Was it Aladdin or was it Bonkers?
Bonkers. Bonkers. Because you get Bonkers Tuesday through Friday and Monday was Schnookums and Meat.
Yeah, and in a way that might have been trying to accommodate for like the way they had like made the Miranda episodes decided they weren't good enough. They wanted to like catch up with the Lucky episodes before showing those ones that they didn't consider as strong. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Miranda episodes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta say, overall, you know, this wasn't so much a rewatch for me or Tuesday, but at the end of every episode, we always ask the question, does the magic still hold up?
I definitely see some magic in here. But on the other hand, I can see why this only lasted one season. I really can. I mean, there's definitely potential for greatness, potential for magic in here. But I can see how some audiences at the time, even some parents at the time, could see this isn't really what we want to be watching. But I can see where you get a lot of your inspiration from, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if I had to blame anything on the fact that this only got one season, it would be that I think Pith Possum and Tex Ten Star are just leagues weaker than the Schnookums and Meat stuff. I really do like the Pith Possum stuff. I really have nothing against it. But I think it needed to come wrapped in a nice ball of Schnookums and Meat rather than, you know, the kind of...
Maybe if they had done an 8-minute Schnookums and Meat and then you do an 8-minute Pith Possum, maybe a 4-minute Schnookums and Meat.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe. I think what the three shorts would have been something else, you know, knowing in particular that they wanted to spin off those other two characters. So I don't think it would have been the same three segments. And also at the same time, I think, you know, while this is my favorite television cartoon ever, it's also like the first season of my favorite cartoon show ever that never got its chance at a second season. I think, you know, most shows that run for multiple seasons, you know, the first season is usually the weakest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the thing is I would have liked to have seen where this would have gone. And even stuff like Pith Possum and Tex Ten Star, I might have liked the second season better than I liked the first season stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see a world in which the Pith Possum and Possum City stuff might have been my favorite part of the show. But as it stands... You know, that's where I am. But I absolutely do think that there's magic in this show, and I think that it absolutely deserves to get out of the realm of kind of lost media where it's kind of hanging out now that it's really only preserved by fans on the internet.
Yeah.
And I think it deserves to come back into the Disney, you know, animated collection again and... go on Disney Plus or, you know, maybe have a DVD release or something. I don't know. Whatever they're doing now.
Yeah. I think it wouldn't be impossible to expect that it might eventually show up on Disney Plus because, frankly, its airings on Toon Disney, you know, in the grand scheme of things, was not that long ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would also... This is a show that I could absolutely see myself being interested in... like behind the scenes commentary.
Yeah.
Like in a DVD thing.
Well, if you would like that, I don't know if you guys have heard it yet. We did a Kyle and Luke episode where at a convention I interviewed Bill Kopp and Jeff DeGrandis and got to find out a whole lot about this show. So
please check out that episode.
Yeah, please check out that episode of Kyle and Luke Talk About Toons and you'll find out a lot more about the show. I learned a lot of things that day, even though I already knew a whole bunch of stuff about it.
Yeah. So, I think we're going to wrap it up here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one last thing I'll mention is that after this season, Bill had started writing season two, and while he was doing that and waiting to find out the fate of his show, almost everybody else went and worked on the Timon and Pumbaa series.
Huh. Interesting.
And if you see some stylistic similarities, that is why.
So I did see a few Timon and Pumbaa shorts when Disney Plus launched late last year. So I can definitely see the similarities in terms of comedic style.
Yeah, and that's a pretty fun show too.
Mhm.
Cool. Yeah, I was just going to say, so we have two things we need to do to wrap up, which is one to say, Kyle, we always like to do a guest request. So what are you going to request that we do in a future episode?
Because I like to be difficult, y'all are watching the Wuzzles.
Another bit of Disney lost media.
Yeah.
I guess it's going to be back to YouTube for that one, but not next week.
No, well, we have something special for next week. Do you want to go into it, or do you want to keep that a surprise?
Oh, I think they can look at a calendar and figure it out. No reason to keep them in suspense.
We are going next week to a galaxy far, far away.
Van Nuys?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, because travel right now is going to be so such a good idea. So next Monday, as you may notice if you look at your calendar, will be May the 4th. And it will be with us all as we finally take a look at one of Disney's more recent acquisitions, Star Wars!
Yeah!
Star Wars,
A New Hope, the first one, you know, the first one. That
you
is
know,
the first Star Wars.
There
was only one Star Wars movie, and it was called Star Wars.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let me take a look at that. Kyle, is there anything you want to plug before we go?
Hey, folks. Folks, you like cartoons? Have you watched and did you like Schnookums and Meat? Hey, I highly recommend checking out absolutely all of Mighty Magiswords on Hulu. If you've never seen the show before, start with season 2. Then when you love it, watch season 1.
you got some music out there?
Yeah? I do. Folks, please go to tvskyle.bandcamp.com and check out not only my latest full-length Commodore Touchdown, but also my new EP, which is free for everybody unless they feel like paying for it on another service other than Bandcamp, Your Guide to Live Casino Gaming. The last track is an explanation as to why this EP is called Your Guide to Live Casino Gaming. And also, folks, if you would like a physical copy of Commodore Touchdown, say on vinyl, go to needlejuicerecords.com.
Yes, and I have a copy of that on vinyl, also on cassette tape, also on CD. It's a really good album, okay?
It's blue!
And as we mentioned, you've also got an interesting podcast that our listeners might be interested in.
Yeah, folks, I do a podcast with my buddy Luke called Kyle and Luke Talk About Tunes. It is what we refer to as the unprofessional podcast about cartoons by animation professionals.
Yeah, go look that one up. It is one of my favorite podcasts, personally. I like it, and if you love all of us talking about, you know, weird animation stuff and voice actors and all that other kind of stuff, Kyle and Luke talk about a lot of that same stuff, but with much more authority because they have actually worked in cartoons.
And if you go back even further, you can get some behind-the-scenes stuff on Magiswords.
Yeah,
and if you like your voice actors, you can hear our interviews with folks like Eric Bauza, Greg Griffin, and a completely bizarre conversation with Richard Horvitz and Ricky Simons.
So thanks for tuning in for this one. It's lengthy, but like we always say, you knew what you were getting into, and what else have you got going on right now?
Yeah. So for all of that, we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.